Do not be alarmed, ladies and gentlemen. It is, in fact, the Shotcast. We have returned, much like, and, all right, guys, first of all, let's get this out of the way. It is October now.
Mm-hmm.
We are...
This is bow time, right?
Oh, man, is it ever. For a couple of reasons. You know, I love Halloween. Love it. It is absolutely my favorite holiday of this or any year. And it is the changing of the seasons. There is a little bit of a chill in the air in the mornings now.
Down with that. I love it. Yeah. I love it when the humidity disappears. And it can still get hot, but it's not humid. I fucking hate humidity. Fall is the best.
Yeah, and for a tubby fella such as myself, the cooler it is, the better I get around.
Oh, yeah.
So.
This all sounds good so far.
Yeah, yeah, it's fantastic. So, yeah, I love October. I love the weather. I love the fact that a bunch of stupid kids have to go back to school and I don't. That makes me feel pretty good. And I like to feel superior to children whenever given the opportunity.
It helps. And, it helps.
Oh yeah, and yes, and of course, because it is the season, I am just knee deep in, you know, horror movie watching, and I adore that as well. I've actually watched Pet Sematary 2 of all things recently, which is a movie I hadn't seen since I was probably a kid. And that movie involves a zombie dog eating a bunch of kittens, and you see the aftermath, as well as a teen boy getting his face taken off by the tire of a dirt bike.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that, did the first one had Fred Gwynn in it, right?
Yeah, you know, he was the guy who said, sometimes dead is better.
Yeah.
It was that guy.
And, like, didn't like his Achilles tendon, like, get sliced with, like, a scalpel or something in that movie?
By a baby, yes.
Yes. Okay, so what I remember about the original Pet Sematary was, like, the hype surrounding it. And I remember it specifically because the only other time I remember, like, everybody's, this is the scariest movie I've ever seen. You've got to see Pet Sematary. It's the scariest movie that has ever been made. And the only other time that I ever heard that kind of hype was Serpent in the Rainbow.
I would argue Serpent in the Rainbow is a better movie overall than Pet Sematary.
Yes. I actually didn't think Pet Sematary was scary at all.
I don't either. I think that movie is fun at times, but yeah, I don't think it's very scary. I don't think it's a great movie.
I'm still waiting for something to scare me more than Poltergeist did when I was a kid. Hasn't happened yet.
John, I have your hospital, your doctor's results. It turns out that you have cancer of the everything.
Okay. All right.
Still not scared?
No.
Eh,
no, you got to die of something.
You got to try harder.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got to die of something. Like, the day somebody says, hey, you're dying, I'll be like, okay.
Oh, finally.
It was bound to happen.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I'm kind of relieved.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering, like, my whole life, I've been wondering. Now I know. So that mystery's over.
Right.
Spoiler.
I know the expiration date. Yeah, I guess finding out that you have a terminal illness is the ultimate spoiler.
Yeah, I mean, that sucks, but what are you going to do about it, you know? So.
Right.
Like, and am I going to care afterwards? I don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows. Anybody that tells you that they know, they're trying to sell you something. So,
dude,
fuck
don't
them.
Tell me how my life ends. Spoilers. all right. I've occupied far too much of this intro with me speaking here and dropping truth bombs left and right. One, John Dolan. How are you, sir?
Hey. Good. How are you?
We've already talked about that.
Oh, yeah. This is your time in the October movies. Yep.
Yeah, that all checks out. Those are things that happen in the very short.
I was listening for that. That's right. That's right. I'm doing well. I also like October. I love autumn. It is the best season there is. I could not agree more. I haven't been watching a lot of horror movies, but I did start watching Firefly for the very first time.
What? Oh, for the first time?
Bring it, son.
Never watched Firefly.
Yeah, how do you find it?
That's a pretty goddamn good show.
Yeah.
It sure is.
It is the exact right amount of like middle budget sci-fi. It's perfectly hits that tier of science fiction. It's like Star Trek Next Generation. The effects are pretty good. story's good, but there's like a layer of cheese on it that's just right.
Yeah, and unlike, you know, TNG or something, I find Firefly to have a real self-awareness about the kind of show it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like no mug into the camera or fourth wall shit, you know, which usually bugs me in science fiction, but it is very self-aware. Yeah. That is a perfect way to describe it. So it's good. You know, I don't want to use the word dated, but it certainly seems like it from the time that it came from. Like it, yeah. Yeah, but dated almost has like a negative connotation to it. I don't think it's dated. I think it's still really good. It holds up really well. I'm only on like episode 4, but I mean, what is it, like 12?
14.
14
episodes. There are
14
official episodes.
And then that's it. And then there's a movie, right? Yeah. I'm sure you could. I knew you were a fan and you had talked about it like a couple episodes ago. And so I just like sitting around the other night and watched like the latest Saturday Night Live, and I was flipping around at Hulu and I'm like, fuck this, I'm going to watch Firefly. So. It's happening.
Yeah,
it's
great. Let me know when you get done. I mean, the way to do it is do the 14 episodes. When you hit, I think it's episode 7 or 8, is called Out of Gas. One of the, as I said on this very show, one of the best hours of television I've ever seen, I think.
Confirmed.
It's confirmed by Justin.
Looking forward to it.
And then you watch Serenity, which is the feature film, and you're out. And then you just start over, like I do. I've probably seen the original Firefly series. Individual episodes, I've seen a bunch more. I've got my you know, favorites, the ones that warm my heart. But I've probably watched the entire season at least 5 times. So I
can see that. Like, I'm really enjoying it. So
yeah.
I don't want to talk about how many times I've watched Star Trek The Next Generation.
No, I mean, I don't want to go down that road either. No. I'm currently rewatching it again.
And so. That nerd's voice is Justin.
That's me.
And you really are our Star Trek The Next Generation emissary.
Yeah, sure. Deep Space Nine is pretty awesome.
Well, all right.
Although
Star Trek as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about Star Trek.
If you want to get into it.
He says, pushing the glasses up his nose. Excuse me. Sorry, I was having a little coffee there. I was working late last night, so if my voice sounds a little ragged, that is why. Having myself a little sip of coffee to keep myself up and ready to rock and roll.
I hear coffee is good for your vocal cords.
I don't know if that's true. Yeah. Probably not.
I don't know if there's enough about it. Too.
I mean, I read it on Facebook.
Oh, well,
so, then it's like, true. Yeah.
Drink coffee because it's good for you, but apparently don't get a flu vaccine because that's...
You know, stupid. I had this conversation today, and God is my witness, we're going to talk about video games. Never in my adult life have I had a flu shot.
Me either.
I do it every year for probably the past 7 or 8 years, and I used to get the flu all the time, and I have not had the flu since I've started getting flu shots.
Yeah, I've never...
Works pretty good.
I take that back. I've had the flu before, but it's very rare. It's not like a yearly thing for me. I'm much more prone to like stomach bugs and stuff like that for some reason. Like that's, I'm way more likely to get waylaid by something like that than a good old-fashioned bout of the flu.
Same here,
yeah. Yeah. Primarily for me, it's because I have a son who is, elementary school age, and he's around a bunch of other booger factories all day, and he brings home all kinds of shit from those people. I will take whatever I can get in my body to keep from catching all the shit that they pass around. So, yeah. My mom is the director of a preschool kindergarten. And I got the term booger factories from her, and that's how she refers to all the children there. But
it's a technical term.
Happy birthday, Mom.
My mom, who is turning 70 this weekend. Happy birthday, Mom. I'm flying home to visit her in Minneapolis this weekend for 24 hours. Swoop in. Happy birthday. Get the fuck out. but that woman never gets sick because she has had everything there is to have because she is around kids all fucking day. So that's the way to do it. Like, you want to have a fucking iron immunity system, just work at a school with children, apparently, and then you will never get sick again. So
excellent. Yeah. Justin, I feel like we gave you short shrift. Was there anything crazy happening on your end of things this week before we dive into the world of digital interactive entertainment?
No, let's go straight to the video games.
All right. I'll tell you what, while we got you all primed up here, Justin, what you been playing?
A little bit more RimWorld. I was telling Dolan before this, I'm going slow and steady, giving my guys a lot of joy time, a short work day, just taking it slow. Things are getting done.
What, are you European?
At a reasonable pace.
Yeah. It's like a Justin Utopia.
Yeah, I mean, keeping everybody happy, and I've got time to build stuff. It's great. It works out.
So you did not own RimWorld when we recorded our last episode, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you've had it for like a couple of weeks now.
I've had it for 2 weeks, yeah, about 2 weeks now. And I've played it a bunch, and there's something sort of zen about it. I like all the different stories and just so much stuff that you have to manage and that you can either choose to ignore or you can get super into, you know, workflows, and it behooves you to get just really down to a really granular scale with each person and set them up to do, you know, the perfect stuff. I like that. It's sort of this huge puzzle game on like a really big macro type level of getting at all these people working together in just the right order.
Yeah. Have you, any table? It's worth pointing out, like, after the recording last week, one of the listeners on Facebook reacted to the story of Table.
It's a strong story.
It's full of twists and turns, and
I hear Paramount's optioning it off.
Yeah, it's it's actually going straight to series on Amazon. Wow.
Nice. They snapped it up.
But have with your measured approach to the game, I'm wondering if, like, John and I have probably a more slapdash sort of interaction with RimWorld. So I'm wondering,
when you're ready, we can segue to my RimWorld story that we recorded. That was definitely slapdash decisions happening left and right.
Yeah, you really made a lot of bad calls. We'll get to that.
I watched the video recently. It was not all me.
Not how I remember it.
Okay. I have to watch
that. I have not had any crazy moments. I was building my, you know, my base and got to a wall where I got the prompt that was like, oh, if you go through here, there might be a hidden, you know, an ancient mystery. And I was like, nope.
Yeah, not, I've run across that as well and have not cracked through one yet.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't have enough guns to deal with whatever's on the other side of that. Really nothing too crazy has happened. I have stuck to, like, trying to research the stuff that's more passive, like the passive cooling and stuff like that, so that...
How does that work?
It's just like you build this thing and you have to refill it with, I can't remember if it's wood or something, every so many days to keep it cooling a room. And it's not like a freezer, but it will keep, if there's a heat wave, it'll keep all the bedrooms and stuff. You have to put one in each room, but it will keep
it. Air conditioning light, kind of.
Yeah, okay. It's weird.
It's like a swamp cooler.
Yeah, but it takes no electricity. So, like, I've just been using, like fire pits and that, and just building up a ton of stuff and then researching a bunch of stuff, and then I'll build a whole bunch of stuff at once, I'm thinking.
What starting conditions did you go with? What was the AI that you chose?
I went pretty much on like the lean side of, I think I did the one that allows you more time to build the base builder one.
The Chillax,
Whatever
her name was.
But then I think I did maybe the for the AI was just like the one that's completely random.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I have to go back and look. I think I've got it recorded.
Well, while we're on the subject here, John, You want to drop the story of your, I mean, not to spoil anything, but completely doomed colony.
So we recorded, we're on episode 3 of our Let's Play has been released. I believe after the first 2 episodes, we, like Justin and I, rode one into the ground and we started a new one. So it's our second colony in that Let's Play. And it was going pretty good. And then all 3 of us got on the stream one night to record it. And we had a raid. And we captured, we fought them off and shot them down, and they were not dead yet. So we captured 2 guys and we put them in our prison. And immediately we started discussing which one of them we were going to harvest organs from first. And then
basically the same conversation we have when we meet anyone new.
Yeah, yeah, normal stuff.
Then we realized that one of them, his name was Nordgren Murderer. Murderer was his last name. And when you looked at his stats, he was a serial killer. And the other guy was a Marine. And we can go back to the stream and we can see whose idea it was. But choices were made that we decided that keeping the serial killer alive versus the Marine was the way to go. I'm assuming
I think
to keep it more interesting.
Yeah.
Which paid off.
It was that, boy, that seems like something that would cause some problems. So.
Yeah. So I took some notes here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Let's get this right.
Yeah. Okay. So, we decided we would harvest organs from Glenn because we had never done that in game and we wanted to see how that works. And I knew you could sell them for a lot of money. So that was kind of the impetus behind that. So we've got Nordgren and Glenn. Glenn was a Marine locked in a single room with 2 prison beds in it. And they were recovering. Nordgren recovered really fast and was kind of pacing around in there. And what was it that happened here? Oh, one of the most interesting things about Nordgren at that point was that he didn't always sleep in his bed. He would sleep on the floor next to his bed. There were times that he would sleep in Glenn's bed with him. And then we had a short circuit, and one of the batteries inside the building exploded. This is back before I decided my new method of containing batteries behind walls, and I just had them sitting next to a wooden wall. So the base started on fire. And while the base was on fire and we were putting the fire out, we were also raided. So the base was on fire. We're under a raid. And at that moment, Nordgren goes into a berserk state and starts attacking the door to the colony, to the prison cell that he's in. He escapes. Our 2 guys, our 2 main colonists that were, I think we had 3 at that time, but one of them was useless. She was a pacifist, and she basically wouldn't do anything. She was weird. She wouldn't doctor people. She wouldn't engage in any sort of violence. Like, I don't even remember what she was good at. But 2 people stepped up. There was Bojean Sprinkles Ransdell, who was the colony founder, and she was pretty goddamn good. And then the other guy, his name was Combat Torturer, and he was just kind of like the all-around dude. Like, shit would go down, and other people would be getting shot and falling apart, and then he would just, like, do what needed to be done. So Nordgren broke out of his cell. Sprinkles and Combat took him down. We put him back in the cell again. Glenn died during all of that melee, and I've watched the video. I just saw the Jack Nicholson thing pop up. That's great. If anybody's watching the stream right now, that's a good image. Yeah, I mean, that's a Nordgren. I mean, that's kind of how I pictured him right there. Yeah, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I like to participate in a quiet manner.
Goddamn movie, Shining.
Yeah.
I've watched the stream, and I can't tell if Glenn just died or if Nordgren killed him. There's like Nordgren was near the bed when it happened. I didn't have either of them selected, so you couldn't tell what had gone on. That right after that, Nordgren escaped from, he went berserk and he escaped from the room, and then we shot him, put him back in there.
I mean, he killed the guy. That's just.
I'm assuming that's what happened. The Marine.
We don't need a 48 hours mystery episode for this. He murdered him, and he like drank his blood, and he got like super strong.
That's right. He got all ripped, and then he busted the door down, and yeah, you know. During all of that, it wasn't until afterwards there was like a warning on the side that an escape pod had landed, and so we went to look for it and realized that it was about 100 meters from the front door of the colony, and just because of all the other shit that was going on, that person bled to death within sight of Salvation, which is actually the name of the colony that was the generated name, the randomly generated name that came up, which is perfect. We had no food at that point. We had no medicine. I had prioritized hunting, but it was too late. It was at that moment that Sprinkles started engaging in raw cannibalism, which is pretty much where the end starts for every colony. Not long after that, Sprinkles had gone berserk, and we had decided after that, Combat had to like put Sprinkles down, had to shoot her, and luckily didn't kill her, put her in a medical bed, where she shortly after that bled to death, unfortunately. So it was just Combat. He was the only one left. And like right after, like the only person he had known for, you know, quite some time in the colony, he had to shoot her, which led to her ultimate death. I'm worried that he's going to like break and go berserk himself. So we locked Nordgren in his room and decided we were going to euthanize him. But Combat did not have any medical training, so he could not do that. So the only other option left to us was to just starve him to death.
Right.
So we locked him in there.
Yep. The most humane of all methods of euthanasia.
Yeah, just don't open the door. So we turned off, like, no medical, no food, no going in there to try to warden him and turn him to our side or anything like that. We just put him in a box and forgot about him. So I gave those orders. Sprinkles had just bled to death in her bed, and Combat went out and just went for a walk. And when you click on him, his status said going for a walk. You know, Combat had some shit had gone down. He needed to clear his head. Let's see. He rescued her. I got to look at my notes here. It was crazy. There was so much shit that was going on. Can't read my notes. Well, sorry.
And I don't want to get ahead of you, but there's a certain point where we realized Nordgren was out.
Yo, well, and that was the thing. He starved to death. He fucking died. And there was like a couple of raids. It got really confusing. There was a lot of shit going on, and it just kept going downhill. So like another colonist showed up, and she became part of the colony. There were raids. A couple of raids happened. And I think at the time, there was a series of a colonist would show up, and then the colonist that was there would die. So there was a colonist. Oh, it was pirates. There was a colonist escaping from raiders. We said, come join our colony immediately. She came in the front door. The fight that happened because of that with the raiders led to Combat's death. So he died outside. So this new person that had just showed up was all alone in this new colony, and none of the former residents were there anymore. And during, I believe it was during that fight, we realized that Nordgren, who had died in the prison, his body was now laying out in the kitchen. And I don't know how that happened.
Zombie Nordgren.
I don't know. I mean, it was, all of the circumstances around Nordgren, the serial killer, were very, very mysterious and sketchy. Like, we would be off doing something else, and then we would go to check on him, and then, like, the other guy was dead. And it was, you know, we're like, oh, well, he must have fucking murdered him. And then he's gone berserk, and then we got to shoot him, and then we put him back in his cell. And then at one point in the stream, it had been a long time since we checked on Nordgren. I believe I said something like, oh, man, I forgot about the Nordgren, and said that's, like, the worst plot hole ever in a horror movie, is they forgot about the fucking serial killer, really? That shit happens, apparently, in real life, because I did it. But, yeah, somehow his body, I don't know, I'll have to check the stream. Maybe it's on there. Hopefully the camera was in that region so I could see if like somebody went in there and was carrying his body out or something. But as far as I know, the serial killer like had one last death throw, and he just crawled out of the fucking prison and tried one more time. It was really weird.
Yeah. Well, it's the typical horror movie thing of the last gasp reaching to the camera kind of thing.
And it was great. There was just, it was so many different fucked up things all going on at the same time. And then the fact that the guy's a serial killer and was behaving in a very serial killer manner was just so fucking cool. That game is just so awesome. What is my clock on that? I've got 32 hours in RimWorld already. I've only owned it for like 3 weeks. It's just a great game. There's just so many opportunities for weird shit like that when you start going down the road of balancing people's mental state with doing things like harvesting their organs for sale or selling them into slavery or just murdering them. Like, I have a colony going now where I have set up a prison that is away from the rest of the facility. It has a separate entrance to it, and I have a bedroom in there for the person who is the warden. And I specifically picked that person because one of their traits is that they are a psychopath, which means they have no empathy at all. So they do not, they're not affected by the suffering of others in any way. So that fucking warden is the best goddamn warden there is on the planet, because if I need somebody fucking killed, just send him in there and he does it and he doesn't care. It's great.
Right. He doesn't have to take time off. And
yep. But he doesn't have like the serial killer trait. He's just, one of his traits is that he's a psychopath, which means he just doesn't fucking care. It's like his social skill is zero.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
There's so many cool systems in that game. So anyway, that's my RimWorld spiel. There's more to the story. More shit happened before the colony went downhill, but that was the beginning of it all. It was great. I'll have the episodes up for the Let's Play if anybody's interested.
Yeah,
it was a good run. It was really great because all three of us were on the stream. It was super funny. We were having a great time. All the the discussions about which one to keep and kill were all really good to go back and watch. So,
all right. So Justin. Back to you, now that we've got RimWorld out of our system, and everyone should watch that video. There is a fair amount of glee at the discovery that there is a serial killer in our bits. and then John made poor decisions. That's, I think the video will continue to back up that claim.
Yeah, you can pull it affect that all you want. It's going back to you, buddy.
Bo gets a pants on fire.
I was running the mouse.
Story.
we'll have to fact check the stream. That'd be good.
Yeah, we should have one going.
Get one of those lines at the bottom that shows what the audience thinks, you know, like their impressions. We'll have Democrat, Republican, Independent impressions of our decisions and
right.
What we're saying.
Which person on the show is most checking. Trustworthy?
That's right. Run some polls.
That's what we need, is more polling on the podcast. It's always exciting for the listeners.
Live polling.
Yeah.
Does this suck? Just a spike.
Right. Buries the needle. All right. Shut up. Justin, what have you been playing?
Not much else. I am patiently awaiting the next Star Citizen update, which should be on Sunday. Their Citizen Con, their big convention, is on Saturday. So they're going to be showing off a bunch more stuff that we'll see in the 3.0 version of that game, such as the planets. And I've watched a bunch of videos on the planet system itself, and it looks like that's going to be just really crazy. They're doing like different layers and meshes to where you can basically get it 90% of the way and then have a designer come in and just add, you know, a little bit more artistic flair, and then make each planet look seem very unique, which that would be pretty cool to see.
Have they released any information about how big, like, the solar system or galaxy is going to be? Like, what number of planets will be accessible in that game?
I believe there's something around 1,000 planets. Wow. Is what it is supposed to be right now.
All right.
And the thing that's different with them is, you know, in a lot of other games, even space games that you play now, when you go into a system, you know, there's a sun in that system, but it's probably all still stationary. And, you know, it just tricks you into thinking that all those things are out there to a degree. And just like a couple of the videos I've watched where they, you know, are sort of showcasing the next tech is the lighting on the planet will be reflective of where it is in the solar system orbiting around the suns. And so that you could have like a binary star system and have like a really weird where, you know, maybe a part of the planet is daylight and another part's not, and have different configurations of that depending on, you know, where you have different suns in the solar system. So there's a lot of crazy stuff that they're kind of doing with the technology for that.
That level of simulation is, that's what I've been waiting for my entire life. Yeah.
And the more videos I watch, the more I learn is, you know, Crytek basically couldn't pay their employees for several months. And Star Citizen bought essentially the people who created CryEngine and were the developers on it to just come work for Star Citizen. So you're getting the people who built the engine that they were already using. And these people are just like, yeah, we can do this. You know, it's just all custom now at this point. So the hurdles that they've overcome with like the procedural tech and stuff like that, you wouldn't have got that if Crytek hadn't been able to pay their employees for a couple months. They'd really got lucky. And they've made all these leaps and bounds in such a short amount of time. Whereas I think before that happened, I think the development was kind of in a little bit of a bad place with some of the stuff we'd seen come out. Like, they basically scrapped the first-person module and redid the whole thing, and now we're getting that module, hopefully on Sunday, which is like the deathmatch, you know, more like arena-type stuff that we'll be able to hop in and play.
Nice. I'm hoping that with all the shit that No Man's Sky and Hello Games is going through right now, that's a real eye-opener for not only Star Citizen, but like the entire industry as far as, you know, you can oversell your game, but make sure when you put it out that you can do those things.
Yeah. So. And I think they're very good about showing off things that are in progress. And yeah, the scope of that game is just massive at this point, like way beyond what the original Kickstarter wanted to be.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get something, you know, a finished product that is on pretty close to the scale of what they're trying to do.
I mean, and there's a roadmap that exists. EVE Online has been showing people how to maintain a game for 13 years or something like that, that game's been around. Like, there's a way to do it. See how these guys, they just keep releasing. Like, if you look at what EVE Online is now versus what it was 10 years ago, it's totally different. There's so many new systems involved, and it is okay to put out a game that is, you know, a little bit shallow as long as people understand that there is more coming. Like, here's what we got now. It all works really good. We're adding these things. Like, tell people what your plans are. Give them, you know, the best time frame you can. Another game that's not doing very well with that still is like DayZ. It's been
it's been
150 days or something since their last update. And yeah. It's like, what else you got? I mean, there's still shit I can't do that I could do in the mod. Like,
yeah, and you know, they basically are in the same, almost the same situation that Star Citizen was at one point, where they realized that our game is bigger than the engine that we have.
Yeah.
And so we basically have to do everything custom. And yeah, it's taking forever, and I am over it. But at the same time, it's like, just don't play it, you know?
Yeah,
just don't play it at all.
And I'm not. And that's the thing. And, you know, I'm actually surprised that DayZ is still maintaining the you know, user count that it does on Steam.
Me too.
These games are getting super huge and very complicated, and they just need to, like, communication is the key.
Yes.
Like, you cannot have some sort of secretive development when things are starting to get this massive, because it will take you fucking 10 years to build a game, and there's no way to fund something like that. Like, Star Citizen is a complete anomaly, and that will probably not happen again for a long time, where enough people will be interested in what you're selling that you're going to get $100-something million up front with nothing. Like, they got all that money with nothing to show for it other than some, you know, flashy tech demos and the fact that Chris Roberts has, you know, a storied history. Like, obviously this guy is the guy who can pull this off if it's going to happen. And you just need to be open. Like, they've been doing a pretty good job. Here's what we got. they got a lot of feedback about people were just like, yeah, this kind of sucks. This is not good enough. I want this. We want this. And they do a really good job of listening to their, you know, their supporters. So communication is just fucking key. And that is something that CCP has been nailing for years. So follow that, I guess.
Yeah. Communication, the key to any successful relationship, really.
What?
That's right. Yeah.
Let's just not talk about this, but let's not do this.
Right. Let's just stamp it down until it eventually becomes a powder keg of emotion that cannot help but explode.
That's right.
That's, yeah.
No, we should move in together. I'm not picking on just you and your recent situation. Like, we've all been there, man.
Oh, man.
I've had roommates, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I've lived with people that shouldn't have pulled that trigger.
Right. This was an error. Yeah.
And you just don't know until it's too late. So.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to go into that. So what else?
That's what leads us all to eventually just become hermits, which is how it was intended to be. So.
Yeah, I could get good internet at the top of a craggy hill somewhere, then I would love to find some sort of cave style dwelling. I've grown accustomed to a certain lifestyle as well. And
have you considered an abandoned mine shaft?
Yeah, of course. Missile silos, mine shafts.
Oh yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've thought about it, but they're pricey.
Some sort of a submarine situation in the Atlantic, maybe. I don't know.
Diesel is very expensive. You have to go nuclear for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah. Nuclear submarine. Like, who wouldn't want one of those?
You could do, like, your own, you know, you could buy one of those oil rigs and turn it into your own country.
Oh, yeah.
It's not Someone bad. Did that.
Then That's I can not bad. Continue my experiments to create monkey people.
Strong weird. Monkey importer. Bonesia is.
Bonesia. Here in Bonesia, there is but one law. Only the strong survive.
Fight.
Yeah, I would host a Mortal Kombat tournament.
Nice. 100%. Nice. That'd be cool.
There you go. Yeah.
The Kumite in Bonesia.
Right, like, let's assemble the greatest fighters in this world and potentially outworld to come to my derelict oil rig to fight to the death until we proclaim one the champion. This is either
are there tickets available for this?
It's all gonna be
streamed live.
Bonesia.com.
I don't know that you necessarily live stream a Mortal Kombat. I feel like that's something that should be whispered about in legend. Unless we have a Goro, in which case we're certainly live streaming.
Yeah.
That's just good business. One Goro equals live stream. What else have you been playing there, John?
Because he can hold all the cameras at one time.
Oh my god, yeah. He would be a great interviewer because he could hold his own camera and the microphone.
And the mic.
Yeah. And still be able to, you know, gesticulate as he's interviewing a subject.
Nice.
All right. Oh, so I keep asking, and then we get sidetracked yet again. What else have you been playing there, John?
I did some Hitman 5. We did a quick look for that as well. Not Hitman 5. I did Hitman Episode 5, the latest one where it is the Colorado farm. It is kind of a following the... I don't know. They were kind of billing it as like the Oregon militia thing that happened recently in the United States, but it was more of, I don't know, just a farm full of like armed, you know, militants. Like it was much more massive than anything that Oregon standoff seemed like it had going on. I heard comparisons to Waco as well, but it was, I don't know, it wasn't
way more put together.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cool map. It's actually kind of a small map, but it was dense. It was very dense. Like there was a lot of stuff going on. There was all kinds of outbuildings. There was like a perimeter fence. There were plenty of hiding places. There were there's four targets that you have to kill, plus you have to extract, you have to kill four targets, and there's information hidden somewhere on this farm that you also have to find before you can successfully complete the entire mission, which is the first time they've done that. But previously, the most targets they've ever had in a map was two. And each of those targets had like numerous avenues to assassinate them. The one we did on the stream, where we killed two targets at once was pretty cool, where we, just happened across a guy who was in the shed and he was limping. And before I even kind of knew what the storyline was for that guy, I killed him and the other guy that were in the room. We drowned him in the toilet, which was fucking great. And then we took the other guy's disguise. So we were kind of dressed up as like this, almost like a Black Ops kind of ninja looking dude. He had a face mask on. So we kind of had free reign of anywhere on the farm except for the farmhouse. And then we found out there's people talking that, oh, they're training for this mission where they're going to, slam a van into a limousine, kill all the people on board, and then steal a briefcase, from inside the limousine. And to train for that, they have a smashed up limousine in this barn. They have a, like an air ram, battering ram, like this pneumatic powered thing that slams into it. And then you would, you know, run up and shoot these dummies that were in the thing. But you find out that the guy who was limping, was injured by that ram, and they were waiting for him to come back. So we went back, we got his uniform. You go back to the farm and you sit down and you watch like a PowerPoint briefing, and they say, okay, here's how we're going to do it. And then you go and you actually do the practice run. And it's a timed run, and then when you get to the end of it, you, like, trip to safety, and then the woman who's there, who's one of your targets, is like, great, yeah, excellent, we did that really good. That's exactly how I want to see this done. And then one of the other targets walks up, and as they're kind of having a conversation about how well it went, they end up kind of slowly meandering over, and they're looking at the limousine, and they walk right in front of the air ram. So you go over and you flip the safety off of it, and you walk over and you fire the air ram right through both of them, and it just smashes them into the car. That was a super cool way to kill them. There's a couple of other ways to kill each of those characters individually. It was really a fun map. It's probably the, I don't know. I was just about to say it's the best one, but that Sapienza map, the Italian villa, was still really cool. Hitman just keeps getting better. They have one more location they're releasing. The map is in Japan. I'm really interested to see what that is. I'm hoping that it's some kind of like downtown, like Tokyo scenario.
Right, like a Shibuya kind, like, of high traffic.
Yeah, area. Give me something with like a lot of characters walking around. Like there was that Murder of Crows in Blood Money where it was in New Orleans and there was just thousands of people everywhere. That had a super cool vibe to it because it was the city kind of, I mean, even for a game that old, it had a real life to it. And with the engine that they have going on for this Hitman, they can obviously have hundreds and hundreds of people on the level. The Paris map is just packed full of people. So it's totally possible. Every map that they've had so far has kind of been like there's the Paris mansion. There's the Sapienza is a really cool one because there's a whole town, a little beachside town, and this villa. There's a church. That one's huge. There's just a lot to explore on that one. The Marrakesh map was really cool. That one had probably the most people on it. That was like a big open bazaar you could walk around in. They've all been pretty good. I mean, when I'm thinking about it now, like they've all been really well, super cool design maps. Like if you see Hitman on sale and you're interested at all, it is a fucking great Hitman game.
Yeah, it's definitely on my short list of things to pick up. I'll tell you the one thing that I wish Hitman had that none of the streaming of this game I've seen suggests that it does, is I wish it had that Assassin's Creed mechanic of being able to walk behind someone and when you're close enough, just give them the old liver stab and then keep on trucking as they bleed to death behind you.
Yeah. And you can kind of do that. Like you don't have to like do the subdue maneuver. You can, if you have a certain weapons, like a hammer, a knife, you can do like a quick throat slit with a kitchen knife. You can just do a bash with the hammer, which comes in handy like when you're in a room where there's a couple of guys and somebody's kind of always watching. You can bash a couple of guys before they can do anything about it. but that's not like a real silent assassin kind of a maneuver like in Assassin's Creed, where it's just like slit a throat and disappear into the crowd. Like somebody always sees you in Hitman when you do that kind
of
shit.
Yeah,
so.
That's kind of a bummer, but I,
Yeah, I mean, it's close. Like, that's just kind of not Hitman's style, though, the way that those games have always been. Like, they've never really had that mechanic. Maybe, you know, like, they've kind of got a formula to it. Like, I could see how people who don't really like the Hitman series would be kind of bored with this one, because it's a Hitman game. You know, it just happens to be a really good one of those. So if you're into that, it will be, you know, one of the best Hitman games you've played.
Yeah.
So.
I think as I evolve as a person and video game player, I think Hitman is falling more into my wheelhouse than it did when I was a younger gamer.
It's got that same thing that Justin was talking about with RimWorld, where it's just kind of a zen thing. Like, once there's moments of tension, but once you've kind of gotten into the location and you've obtained a disguise that allows you some freedom, you can just kind of walk around for a while and nobody fucks with you, because you're just, oh, you're a security guy. Like, why would we care who you are? And then you just kind of scope out stuff for a while. So it's got like that nice calm moment to it, you know?
I always sort of compared Hitman and Splinter Cell to a degree. And those are both games, and even like earlier Metal Gear Solids, where you are basically trying to figure out the patterns, and you're trying to, more so in Hitman, find out the secret to the pattern. You know, in that game, it's like, okay, well, he goes to the kitchen at this time every day, I bet if I can find some poison and I can put it in the thing, then he'll die, and I won't even trip any alarms.
Yeah, but it's hard. It's a puzzle game. It totally is.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always liked about the Hitman games.
Yeah. I can see how some people would find that boring. Like, there is a clockwork to it.
Yeah.
What I really like about this version of Hitman is the opportunities system, where you don't just kind of have to stumble into the way to do things. Like, it will kind of hold your hand through it and just show you a cool way to do it. Like that whole the air ram thing where we assassinated both people at the same time, that was part of the opportunity system. We were walking through the map and a little light bulb pops up, and if you go stand next to the people for a second, they're talking about some way to do something. Like, there was another one in there where one of the people that we killed in the air ram incident, there's another way to kill her where you disguise yourself as a technician, and her backstory is that she used to work for Interpol, and you go up to her and pose as an Interpol agent that has infiltrated, and you're trying to turn her back to Interpol. And so you get her to walk off with you into this secluded shed, and you propose this to her, and the way you find out about it is there's like two guys over by this sludge pool where like all the shit and like toxic waste that this camp is generating is all dumping into this big slurry pit. And they're like, yeah, did you hear that they're going to, you know, so-and-so Joe Blow technician over there is going to like the head guy asked him to like go test this woman to make sure that her loyalties are in the right place. And then once you hear that, it says, oh, well, go get this guy's uniform. And then once you get that guy's uniform, it says, okay, now go talk to the woman and get her to come with you. So it leads you down that path. It doesn't tell you exactly how to like execute each step. It just says, go to this area and accomplish this general task, and then we'll tell you the next part of the puzzle. And it's really cool for somebody like me who doesn't have tons of time to play games. Like old Hitman, it was literally just trial and error. And fuck, that didn't work. All right, start over at the beginning because I want to get the fucking Silent Assassin achievement on this level. Like, I want to do it perfect. And with this one, they help you a little bit more, and it makes it fun because you can complete the contract. But there's a bunch of those in each level. It's not just one, you know, puzzle to figure out. There are 5 puzzles for each assassination that you want to do. So it's just really a cool system. It's basically a spoiler system built into the game, but it totally works. It's really fun. I also played, I bought Hyper Light Drifter. That game's cool, man. The art style is fucking great in that game. But it is hard. I've heard it compared to Dark Souls, which is not a series I really care for. I bought Bloodborne, thinking that would be a little more accessible, and I only played maybe 4 or 5 hours of that game and ended up selling it because I was just like, I'm not into this puzzle combat style thing. But I like Hyper Light Drifter because it's a little bit more of a... It has that to it where you need to figure out specifically how to fight certain enemies. You have to time your dash and your, you know, when you go in for a slash, and it has that element to it, but it's more arcadey. It's more,
More Zelda-like.
Yeah. Like, I'm not really a fan of Zelda, and I can see that comparison because it's got the top-down aesthetic, you know, kind of the isometric feeling to it, but I never really remember there being like a...
Not that fast-paced of combat.
No, yeah, not that fast-paced.
Nothing that required that amount of timing.
Yeah, but the thing that made me buy it is, and I haven't tried, they have an easy mode that they've added to it, and I have not tried that yet, but on PC they've released the, if you do the beta branch on Steam, they added 60 frames per second capability to the game, and you can play that if you opt into the beta branch, and man, does that make it smooth. It makes that game way better to play. Like, I had read people saying things about comments that people had made about how the backgrounds would kind of shimmer and, you know, jitter and jump a little bit and kind of an unpleasing way to watch. And I played it in 30 FPS for a while, and I was like, oh, where's the option to turn this to 60? And then I realized you had to download the beta branch. So I saw it both ways, and 60 frames per second is so much smoother and better, and man, that game's great. I got it for like $13. It's really fun, and it's I think my favorite thing about it is it the story is basically just kind of told to you through pictures. Like, you'll encounter an NPC and he'll show you pictures of like a family playing in a field, and then a bunch of soldiers coming over a hill, and then like the father getting dragged away, and, you know, people in hiding, and then you just like, oh, well, this place got raided and there's fucking dead bodies everywhere, and they just give you this general story. But you can basically go anywhere in the game that you want. Sometimes you come up against enemies that are a little harder to beat, so you may need to find some upgrades for your you have like a pistol and you have a sword, and you can get a shotgun, which I haven't gotten yet. I just kind of read a little bit about it. But you're really not limited to where you can go from the beginning of the game. It's kind of just like a north, south, east, west choice. And there's a bit of puzzling to, you know, kind of finding your way to areas. There's a system of underground pathways that you kind of have to find. And I kind of really like that, like, you need to go find enough stuff so that when you come back to this part of the game, you can unlock this door and then go to this, you know, area. And each of these four directions kind of has a boss in it that you can beat. The overworld map is just kind of open to you from the beginning. You can just kind of see everywhere there is to go. It's a very general map. It's not like super detailed. But it's fun, man. The look of it is just great. It's got a great, you know, 16-bit arcadey feel to it. Soundtrack's fucking awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I played the Rocket League Rumble expansion a little bit. That's where it's just like randomized mayhem. That's a fuckload of fun, man. There's my favorite thing in that is there is a so you're just playing like a normal round of Rocket League, and there are way more turbo recharge pads throughout the arena. So you rarely are out of boost. And then I think it's just a timer. I didn't realize notice that it was attached to any sort of like I'm picking up things. I know it wasn't that. Like I couldn't tell if it was tied into if I had picked up boost or if it was just on a timer. But randomly you get assigned like a power, and there's one that's like spikes shoot out of your car, and if you drive your car into the ball just sticks to the spikes, and then you can just drive your car into the goal with the ball stuck to you and get a goal that way. There's one where you'll be driving around, excuse me, and when you get into the within a certain proximity of the ball, a reticle appears on the ball telling you that you're in range to use this power, and you hit it and it will turn the ball into ice and it will freeze it in position. If it's hanging in the air, it just hangs in the air frozen for a while. and somebody has to hit it and smash all the ice off of it to get it to move. It eventually melts after like 15 seconds or something like that. But if somebody is shooting the ball into your goal and you've got the freeze ray, you can just freeze it before it goes in the goal and then hit it away. It'll just be stuck there. But the best one so far is a giant boxing glove on a spring and a giant shoe on a string. And so when you get in range of the ball or other players, you can just click your thumbstick in, and like this huge kind of cartoony looking boxing glove shoots out from your car on a spring and goes bang, and it hits the guy and sends him flying across the thing. It's fucking great. So it's just crazy. Like, you never know what other power-ups people are going to have. I got the one where the reticle appears on another car and you click the button and you teleport to their position and they teleport to where you were. So you just swap places with them on the field and they have no idea that's coming. So it's just constant craziness. And they also did an upgrade where they added a new arena, which is like underwater, the arena. So there's like sharks and shit swimming around you. And I only saw like the release video for that. I was in a playlist, but the map never came up. But that looks really cool just from an aesthetic standpoint. There's a lot more shit in that game than the last time I played it. Like, they've added a ton of arenas. They've got the hockey mode. They've got basketball mode. They've got the new brawl mode. It fucking holds up. There were tons of people on the playlist. Like, I'm just like, oh, let me check out the rumble mode. And there was like 2,000 people in the play, in the queue, whatever. It's great. The last thing I played. Go ahead.
What was the number of players?
It's like 2,000 people playing.
Really?
Yeah, okay. just the Rumble queue, and I played it like in, you know, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that game still got a huge player base. It was fun.
I mean, speaking of showing the video game industry how to do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they continue to sell. Yeah, like they've released a couple of new DLC cars, and apparently people are buying that shit because they keep making it. So. And it's like a new car is like, it's just skins. It's all, aesthetic, cosmetic stuff. And it's like $2, you know, like you see a car you think is cool, it costs $2. So that's fine. You don't have to buy any of that shit.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
And I also played the new map on Star Wars Battlefront. The Death Star map was released.
How's that?
It's fun. It looks awesome, just like the rest of that game. So it's weird the way that it works, though. It you start off with there's like three sections to it. The first section is you are in a TIE fighter, or you're flying in the Rebel side. You're flying like an X-wing fighter or an A-wing. There's B-wings also you can fly. There are hero ships available that you can unlock. You can unlock the Millennium Falcon. And on the Empire side, I think you unlock Darth Vader's TIE fighter. I forget. But you're just performing an assault on a Star Destroyer. And there's multiple sections to that. It is blow up the shield generators that are up near the bridge. And then there will be a wave of you need to destroy 10 TIE fighters as the Rebels. You have to do this. And then... it's all very Rebel-centric. It's all the Rebels are mounting an assault on the Death Star, and step one is take out this Star Destroyer that's on the perimeter. So you destroy the shield generators, you destroy 10 TIE fighters, then you need to blow up the bridge, then you need to destroy 10 more TIE fighters, and I think there's another step to it. And as the Rebels, if you complete that in a certain amount of time, it shows the Star Destroyer blowing up, and then it goes to phase two. Phase two is like a Rebel transport lands in the hangar of the Death Star, and it is a ground assault within the Death Star. So it is just running around on foot, having a laser battle, and as the Rebels, you have to find R2-D2 in the Death Star. You have to hold down your button to take control of R2-D2, and then whoever gets there first and is in control of R2-D2 has to drive R2-D2 to the extraction point in the hangar where the ship was landed. And during that, the Empire forces can run up to R2-D2 and stop him. They can put a restraining bolt on him and freeze him in place again, and then the Rebels will have to get there again, take over R2-D2, drive him to things. So if you do that successfully as the Rebels, then it goes to phase three.
Wait. R2-D2 is in Luke Skywalker's X-Wing fighter.
Not in this version. He's not.
Yeah, this all is right,
now we're just making stuff up.
This is not canon whatsoever.
Great.
Yeah, but it looks awesome. Like, it's another run around and shoot people. It's kind of actually more fun than I thought it would be. Like, the first few times I played it, I'm just like, this is bullshit mayhem. But it's kind of bullshit mayhem in a good way. Like, it's still, I forget what the player count is on the servers. I think it's 24. And that is enough to where hallways can just get fucking clogged up and people are throwing like poison gas to close off pathways, and you can put down proximity mines, and people are actually still using jetpacks indoors because they'll, like, you know, a big blast door will open up, they'll walk into the room, and then they'll jetpack, bump into the ceiling, and then slide all the way across the ceiling and get behind the other guys and blow them all up, and it's just total fucking mayhem, lasers going everywhere. And then the whole time, like, R2-D2's, like, driving through the middle of all of it. It's pretty funny. If you get R2-D2 to the extraction point, it goes to the exterior of the Death Star, which looks fucking awesome. It is big turrets everywhere. There's pipes running all over the place. There's numerous trenches going every which direction. You can dive down into these trenches. You can go underneath pipes. You can go through, you know, small spaces. And it's the same as kind of the previous thing where you're trying to blow up the Star Destroyer. There is waves that you have to do. You have to blow up so many TIE fighters, and then you have to do another thing. And then eventually you do a trench run and you blow up the Death Star, which I have not done yet. So I don't know what it looks like when it blows up. I've never successfully completed the third tier of that thing. So,
well, but you know what it looks like. You've seen the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I know. So the best part of that is my son plays this game. He actually got Star Wars Battlefront for his birthday from my mom, bought it for him for his birthday. So it's technically his game. So we hot seat this Death Star level. We sit there and trade the controller back and forth. And it's the first time that I've gotten him to play that style with me. He always wants to play like split screen games with me. He always wants to be in the game at the same time. And I finally got him to where it is now fun to trade the controller back and forth and take turns. So we were doing that for a while, and I had to like go make some dinner, and I was like, yeah, you can keep playing, just go ahead. And I wasn't paying attention, and I went down in the basement to do something, and I went out to the garage to take care of some shit. And I came back in at one point and realized that he wasn't playing anymore. And it's like, dinner's ready, and I forget about it. And so I'm putting him to bed, and we're like reading a book, and then I always lay up there with him for a little while afterwards, and we just kind of talk about shit. And, I'm like, oh, so what did you think of the new Death Star map? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's really cool when you blow it up.
Son of a...
I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, I blew it up. I'm like, you blew it up. He's like, yeah, I got to fire this shot that blew up the fucking Death Star. God damn it.
Right.
You didn't come get me?
You knew
totally
I had
wanted
dibs.
To see that.
I had the video camera ready.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fun, man. Like, I've seen that game on sale for $20. If you see it on sale for $20, buy it. Like, there's a game there now. There's enough shit in it now that it is worth it being in existence. Like, previously, it was a total fucking disappointment because it was half a game. And they've got one more thing that they're releasing, which is a tie-in with the new Rogue One movie that's coming out. But there's a shitload of content in that game now, and it all looks fucking great. And I am still not a super huge fan of their card system and the way that the tokens and stuff drop. But once you kind of get used to it and you kind of learn the maps and stuff, it kind of doesn't matter anymore because, like, you know, at a certain point in a map that the token for the Millennium Falcon is going to pop up. And if you want to fly the Millennium Falcon, you go to where that token usually is, and hey, there it is. I'm playing the Millennium Falcon now. So I've kind of learned to live with it. It's not the ideal version of that game, but it's easy to forgive it a lot because it looks so fucking good. So, I mean, I've kind of come around on that game, and it's the only reason is because it's actually like a game now. Like, all the shit that should have been in there originally is basically there now, so... It's my re-review of Star Wars Battlefront.
It is a game now.
Yeah, it's a game now. It's fun. Yeah. It's a perfect console game. You can jump in. The only thing wrong with it on PS4 is fucking PS4 load times. God damn, does that shit take a while. Like, I would consider buying this game on PC the next time I see it for $20, just so I could eliminate that wait. So, that's it for me. That was a lot.
Yeah, a fair amount. I have been playing only a couple of games. It has unfortunately been a bit of a busy couple of weeks, what with the moving and whatnots. But I have played some games, and one of them is definitely an in the spirit of the season kind of deal. And also in the spirit of me playing weirdo games. So the game, two games I want to highlight. One is, a game called Corpse Party, which is my 'Tis the Season game, the official Halloween game of the week for the Shotcast episode 40, Corpse Party.
I see it as more Japanese oriented.
Yeah, of course it is, stuff. Because that's what I've been doing.
Because Bo's gone down a hole and he can't find the way out.
Nor do I really want to.
That's what everybody in the hole says.
Yeah, I kind of am enjoying. You know, like, are you kidding me how excited I am for Persona 5 to make its way over? that's happening next year, but there's part of me that's like, I wonder if I should just try the Japanese version. I shouldn't, by the way. The answer to that question is no. I should not. I don't know that much Japanese. That would be a waste of money. Stop trying to talk me into it, John.
Does it really matter, though, that you don't know that much Japanese? Like, if you did understand it, would you really understand it?
Though? Yeah, yeah. Like,
really?
Yeah, I mean, right, where you right. guys find, say, Tokyo Mirage Sessions rather obtuse, I find it to be a delightful story about the power of music. So,
I mean, imagine if I sat down with it, I could get into it. It's just, there's that hump.
Yeah, I think the Kotaku review of Persona 5 was that it was... I'm going to get this wrong, but it was pretty fun and very Japanese. And so anyway, so that brings me back to Corpse Party. Corpse Party is, it's more of the kind of visual novel style of gameplay. You're making some decisions and so forth. But here's what I kind of like about it. Not kind of, I really like about it. The game is incredibly brutal. So the basic premise is you are part of a class, like in Japanese schools, like when you have the class that you start with, you're in that class until graduation pretty much. So it is you and your, or in the story, these kids who are telling a ghost story about the high school that they go to, which years before had been an elementary school that had seen much murder and tragedy and was eventually razed to the ground. And then this high school was built on top of it. Never a good idea, by the way, build anything on the side of a former, you know, murder pit, which is what that elementary school was. And so the game begins with one of the characters telling that story, and as well as telling the story of a ghost teacher that comes to the door and knocks on it and asks if anyone is there. And if anyone says yes, she comes and grabs them and then just murders them. But if you say no, then she comes in and murders you anyway. So it's really a catch-22. But... yeah, and so the game itself is you sort of following these storylines as they descend into a Silent Hill-esque alternate dimension where they seem to be trapped in the world of this elementary school, and ghost children pop up and torment our heroes and occasionally eviscerate them. Like I said, the gameplay itself is kind of pixel arty. And there are a couple of versions of this game. Not versions, there's a sequel and then... a couple of you know, offshoot kind of
installments.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of additional chapters, but I've been playing the first one. And there's another one called Blood Something. Anyway, there's not a whole lot of gameplay to it other than kind of moving your character around until you find the thing you were supposed to find to push the story forward. So, you know, it's been kind of the game I've been playing as I'm going to bed or something like that, because who doesn't want to see, you know, Japanese high schoolers bisected by ghosts right before bed? But that game's been real fun and kind of surprising in how mature the themes and violence are compared to the art style, which is very anime, which for some reason I tend to associate with being a little innocent, and that is not the case at all. Corpse Party is in no way a game about innocence. But at any rate, if you like Japanese horror, which I do very much, I would highly, highly, highly recommend Corpse Party in whatever format you can get it. There is a Steam version available. From what I understand, the PSP or PS Vita version is the preferable version to play because it retains much of the original art, as opposed to the Steam version, which I think has some replacement art for the more extreme kind of images. So, yeah, if you're looking for a Halloween game, you can pick that up. It don't cost much money. I think on Steam it's, you know, like 10, maybe 20 bucks, something like that. I can't remember. But, you know, it's one of those that has varied paths through the story and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. I enjoy all these games. I enjoy all the weirdo Japanese shit I've been playing.
It seems like there's a lot of kind of anime-type games available on Steam recently. Like, if you pay attention to the new releases section, there's several in there every week. How is it that you found this game amongst all that stuff?
I went through... I played all the Japanese dating sims on Steam. Yeah.
Conquered, yeah. Those.
What are those called? The Otamu? I want to say something like that. But anyway... It's a game I'd heard a lot about, like as I was kind of going through the Persona stuff, and I started looking to see if there were some good horror games out there, not necessarily Japanese specific, but just horror games in general that I might want to play. And time and again, this game came up as like, there's some really disturbing shit in this game. And if you're into that kind of thing, it is totally, worth playing. And it turns out I am into that kind of thing. So that's how I ran across it. It really was not related to my, one might call it, obsession with Japanese entertainment. Just one of those things. Really like it, though. The other game, the real game, like you can argue that the visual novel stuff, that ain't a real game. That's just something you push buttons until a thing happens. The honest to goodness game that I've been playing is Forza Horizon 3, which I've been playing for the Xbox One. It's part of the Xbox, crossplay thing where I have the Windows version installed and downloaded, or vice versa. And I tend to play it on the Xbox One because that's really the platform it was built for. And the PC port isn't a disaster, but I have a pretty decent gaming rig. And I don't really get 60 frames a second out of that thing steadily without a lot of chug.
I've heard that from a lot of places that there's some optimization that still needs to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So that's unfortunate, and as a result, I don't play on the PC as much as I would kind of like to. I wish I had the option to play that game at 60 frames a second using, you know, a 1070 to push it. I think it would look great if it ran without all the hitches, and the more crowded the screen gets, obviously.
And you just can't have that in a racing game.
Right. It's completely... Yeah. It's not unplayable, but it's just no fun to play that way.
It's that actually kept me from buying it. Like, I heard a lot of really good things about it. You mentioned it last episode briefly, and I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I haven't played a good racing game in a while, and I've had Dirt Rally in my Steam queue forever, and I just never pulled the trigger on it, and it's probably because I want something a little less simmy, and this game looked like it would totally do that, and then I just kind of heard, well, maybe the PC is not the place to play it, so I have not picked it up.
I'll say this, though. At 30 frames, if you lock it at 30 on the PC, runs pretty much flawlessly. It's when you're starting to push it above.
All right. Well, that's probably good enough for me because, like, I'm not a 60 FPS snob by any means. Like, that's fine. As long as, I mean, I just can't deal with any sort of constant hitching. Or
yeah. And, like, and at 30, it seemed to run pretty well. I saw a little bit here and there, but it nowhere near, like, when you try to uncap the frames. Okay, so that's sort of the technical issues with the game. The game itself is stupid fun. And I mean stupid in kind of both ways. In that it is a lot of fun, and also this game is super dumb. It is just a pure racing game. It's got great environmental variants. There's a lot more off-road stuff in this version of Horizon, I think, than has been in previous versions. To the extent that one of the early races, one of the early off-road races, has you, like, barreling through people's backyards and knocking over their fences and stuff as part of the race route, which is real fun. Nice. In addition to the straight-up races between other drivers or drivatars, you know, they pull people from your friends list or just generic players, and in theory, their driving habits match the drivatar that you're racing against, but, you know, I don't know how one-to-one that is, you know, but you see names above cars all the time when you're just out in the open world, which is the kind of racing game this is. You know, you're driving around, you find, you're unlocking the Horizon Festival, and opening up new areas for the festival to set up camp, essentially, and then upgrading said Forza Horizon Festival camp. And the way you do that is by collecting fans, which you gain by races and stunts and stuff like that. So in general, you can play straight races, whether that's street or off-road or whatever. There's the PR stunts, which are probably the most fun things to do as a rule. If you look at the image we have up right now, that is the first one you do, where you are racing a Jeep that is being carried by one of those Chinook-style helicopters. And at a certain point in said race, the helicopter drops the Jeep, and then you race the Jeep the rest of the way. Yeah, it's pretty great. It's pretty great. Nice. And to the extent that at one point there is a jump that you do. And unlike the other races, the PR stuff is kind of you versus the AI. And there's a point in this race in particular where you're jumping a ramp into the jungle as the helicopter flies by you, and the game actually goes into slow-mo in that moment just to tell you, like, look at this shit. You're actually jumping and nearly colliding with a Jeep being carried by a helicopter. And, you know, it's moments like that where it's incredibly stupid, but it's also kind of fun.
How does the did you buy it on PC, but you play it on Xbox, or was it reversed?
No, I bought it off the Xbox store.
Okay.
And then it just said, like, you know, then when I go to the Xbox app store for Windows 10.
Okay.
It was just like, hey, do you want to download this? Because you've already bought it for the Xbox.
So, like, from a PC, if I just log into the Xbox app, I can just buy it. That's where you buy this game.
Yeah, and you've got to run it through the Xbox store. Word of warning, this is something that we ran into. I was never able to really stream the game from a PC.
Yeah. Did you ever figure out what was causing that? Or
Not exactly. It seems like most of the Windows Store apps and games tend to have this problem. So it's got to be some security that they're putting in the game. Some
DMCA, some shit. I don't know.
Right, some collection of letters that just means we're not letting you broadcast this.
It's a BLLSHIT.
Yeah.
A Run DMC.
It's a Run DMC. potentially a NAFTA.
Oh. I hear that's bad?
Yeah,
it's bad. Knows? I hear it's
who
bad.
Knows? But the game itself, aside from, you know, the events and what I like about the Horizon games is there's a very thin story to most of these. And much like the previous games, this one is just like, hey, you're kind of the head of the Horizon Festival now, and it's your job to create fans and buzz about your racing skills, and now you can hire other drivers as part of your racing team. I don't know. I'm probably going to get this wrong. So you listeners who are big Horizon heads, as we are called by the kids, I don't recall being able to do such a thing in previous games. I think this is a new feature, the ability to basically create a racing team of drivatars as well as your own vehicles. But it's that's really fun. The rivals stuff is fun, you know, where you kind of have this drivatar that is just, you know, a real jerk to you all the time, and you know, eventually you will race them, and if you beat them, then you get all kinds of, you know, in-game currency and fans and stuff like that. So that's kind of fun. You know, this loose narrative thread that kind of yanks you through the races, I think, is kind of what I need to feel like I'm not just mindlessly playing a game that doesn't have a point. Because there is a lot of progression stuff. And as I've said before on this show, if you give me a game where numbers increase and things unlock when you reach a certain point, you've already got like a 2 on my scale of 10. If you just have that component.
I've got a game for you on PS4.
Is it called Diablo?
It's called Adventure Capitalist.
I'm aware, and that's too tempting for me to jump into. Like, that's a game I could have a real problem with.
I've fallen back down that hole. I'm to the point now where I check in on it like once every couple of days, spend 5 minutes playing it, and then I turn it back off. But the numbers are always going up.
And kind of a, you know, to put a ribbon on this Horizon 3 stuff, it's definitely more arcadey than the Forza proper series, but you can get really into the like car tuning and gear tuning and stuff like that. Like, you can still do all that, you just don't have to. And the ultra semi racing games don't hold a lot of appeal to me because I'm not a gearhead, I think is what they're called by Colombian cartels. And I don't get into that style. That stuff is in Horizon 3, but I just don't ever touch it. You know, I'm more like, okay, let me upgrade the tires and the engine and the exhaust and that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to worry about under or over inflating my tires for a particular race.
Do you think by not doing that, you're at a disadvantage that's noticeable?
Who cares? You know, I mean,
you're still able to win here and there and have a good
time. I will say that this one's been seemingly a bit more challenging than the prior games. Like, out of the gate in Horizon and Horizon 2, I was able to just, you know, win games or win races very quickly. And in Horizon 3, I find that, like, I do have to take a car and make sure it's upgraded and, you know, really pay attention to, you know, what am I using this car for? Is this car built for speed? Is this car more built for off-road? So I need kind of that balance of handling and speed but it's a casual game. Like, it's a game that I'll play, you know, last weekend, it was kind of the game I played while I was watching football. And, you know, during the times when the game got a little dull or I just lost interest for a minute, I would jump over to Forza run two or three races, check back in on the football game, watch that for a few minutes, jump back to Horizon, end up playing, you know, 2-3 hours of Horizon just intermittently. And I kind of think that's the best way to play almost any racing game, short of like a burnout or something, where you can just watch destruction happen, you know, over and over again. I do think the damage modeling in this is much better than it's been in previous incarnations, maybe because of, you know, the power of the new platform it's on. Even though Horizon 2 was an Xbox One release, I think Horizon 3 looks a ton better. Yeah, it's a real good game. If you're if you want a fairly lightweight racing game that's not going to punish you for not knowing gear ratios, Horizon 3 is perfect for that. And the PR stunt stuff, like I said, with the, you know, helicopter stunts, and there's one that's just like race through the jungle and burst out of it at the end, you know, stuff like that is real fun. I almost hate to say it, but when you're doing that stuff and you get like, you know, that you've got a feel for the car you're driving and can really manage the turns well and that kind of thing, and you perform and execute the PR stunt finale appropriately, you feel kind of cool. And you shouldn't, but you do. So, yeah, I think Horizon 3 is a real good game.
So I'm looking at this in the Xbox app on my PC here, and they're really trying hard to get you to buy the $99 Ultimate Edition of this.
Yeah, why on earth would you ever?
You know, just by reading for a few seconds, you can see that, you know, there are listed off to the side are the alternate editions for $79.99 and $59.99. But this Ultimate Edition, it's like, when you first look at it, it's kind of like, oh, is this the only thing I can buy? It's $99 for like season pass and VIP crap, but $60.
Yeah, for my money, totally worth the $60. There is a ton of game in this game. Mm-hmm. So long as you like the basic mechanics of the way that these things, you know, drive, and I really do. You know, I've yet to find a racing game where I find kind of the American 70s muscle cars to be any fun at all to drive, because they're mostly rear wheel drive pieces of shit that are incredibly squirrely to control. So I've never liked them. Yeah. But let me tell you about this Lamborghini SUV I got, John. That thing has good handling and it's fast as hell.
Nice. Cross platform, it says here.
Oh, really? Cross platform play? That's cool. Cross
platform multiplayer.
Yeah. Well, if you pick it up, let me know. We'll do some racing. It's crazy fun.
I could use a racing game. I haven't had one in a long time.
And this is like I said, it's a really, really good one. I don't think it's breaking the mold of Horizon games and reinventing what that series is. It's just a great one of them.
I think the last multiplayer driving game I played was Forza 3.
Yeah, I mean, all the
a while ago.
The Forza games, and I know that I'm not the first person to say this. The Forza games are a little too mechanical, for lack of a better term. There doesn't seem to be a lot of personality to those games, for my money. And Horizon, for better or worse, definitely has personality. I still don't like the radios. There's at least a hip hop station this time around. That's kind of fun.
They still make Gran Turismo?
Yeah, was 6 maybe? GT6 the last?
Man, I don't know.
But it's been a while. Like, and Gran Turismo is kind of like Forza for me, in that I find the experience of playing those games to be a little antiseptic.
Yeah, no, I got you on that one.
But I do like I like the vibe of the Horizon quite a bit. So, and that's really all I've been playing. I have now that the moving is done, literally the last of the items from the old place were taken away today. I'm now totally done. I can actually spend the next Actually, I've got a 3-day weekend coming up, so I'm probably gonna be playing some video games. Very excited about that. There's one in particular, but we'll talk about that later.
Some stories here that I'm seeing are Gran Turismo to be released, quote, or Gran Turismo 7 to be released, quote, before 2017. It seems like there's some doubt as to whether or not that's actually happening, but that's just some of the reports I find right away here.
You feel like you would have heard something about it by now, then.
You would think.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up kind of being more of a Forza guy. Like, GT was fun. There was, you know, ass loads of customization. I have the same problem that you do, where it's like, I think it's super cool that all that tuning stuff is in there, where you can, like, literally kind of in game take a wrench to the, you know, the spoiler on it and give it a couple of clicks in any direction. And, like, that level of simulation is neat. I just never get into it. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't care about cars, you know, like, at the end of the day,
I don't have the time. It's just a time issue for me. Like, in order to do this, I would need to understand. I guess it's the same thing you're saying. Like, you don't care about cars. Like, I would need to know a lot of information about how cars work to successfully use a system like that. And I just am not going to dedicate that level of research. I'm sure for some people that is just, like, the game they always wanted. All that stuff is probably the reason they play it. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
I like that they don't force you to do that stuff, though, at least.
Right, so. And that's kind of the best-of-both-worlds situation that I think Horizon 3 has going for it, which is you can get as deep or as shallow as you want with your car customization. Yes, there are things that are going to help you race better, but none of those things are... Like, you don't have to get so granular with it. You can if you want, but mostly, like I said, I go through the baseline menu when you're in the you know, Horizon Auto Shop, where it's just like, hey, I want my car to be red and black, and I also want the tires to be a different compound, because apparently that helps with handling, you know, and that's really all I care about. You know, what stat is this affecting? And, you know, there's plenty of screens to look at where it will show you, like, hey, if you increase your, you know, or get this racing exhaust, then your acceleration is going to go up by 0.2 points or something like that. And, you know, as I said earlier, you give me something like that, I can wrap my video game brain around that kind of thing of, oh, if I get this, my stats go up. But, oh, I got to be careful that I don't get my car so upgraded that I class it out of, you know, this particular race class that I'm mopping the floor with right now. And there's little boards, like there's XP boards and fast travel boards and stuff like that all over the environment, to kind of encourage you to explore the off-road stuff. There are cars hidden in barns, like you can find barns in the middle of nowhere, and if you roll up to them, there's, you know, cars inside that you can add to your collection. And
so is it like an open world? How does
that
work?
For sure. It's just you, like, as you're opening different Horizon venues, which is the overarching, you know, story in quotes of the game, you're unlocking more and more events. And you can do some fast traveling if you want, but it's basically, you know, kind of like the Burnout Paradise or something like that, where you roll up to a particular event, and then if you want to do that event, you hit X.
I like. I mean, that system's cool. I like how that works. It's you're driving the entire time. If you're driving between events, that's still fun. Like, I like that. It's just a free roam.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you can do between events. Okay, yeah, that's cool. Like, don't make me pick my races from a menu. Let me drive there.
Yeah, right. The difference in terrain as you're driving, you know, from one point to another, is interesting enough that that part of it's cool. And another thing you can do is there are certain drivatars that the game has earmarked as sort of your rival, you know. So if you happen to be driving along and you see one of these cars, you can immediately challenge them to a race.
It's like roll up to them at a stoplight and rev your engine up, basically.
I mean, that's the real world equivalent. In this, it's just like, that dude's passing me at about 112 miles an hour. I've got about 0.8 seconds to hit the X button, or he's just gone for now.
Nice. That's
cool. Yeah, it's a really, really well put together game. It's just the biggest knock against it is I still think the radio is mostly crap in these games.
I always end up turning the radio off in driving games because I if they do it right, I want to hear the engine. I want to hear the tires screech. I want to hear like all the environmental sound effects. I want to hear all that stuff. The music is always just kind of like if I want to listen to music while I'm playing a game, I'll just fucking turn on Spotify.
Although I will say I did unlock a radio station recently that peppers in a little Bad Religion. And that's okay. I
mean, that can be fun. Like in GTA, after you've kind of heard it all once, I always end up just turning it off. I don't know. I'm a huge music guy. I listen to music all the time, but sometimes in the game, I just want to hear the game. So.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
All right. That's really all I've been playing. Like I said, my list next time around is probably going to be a little more varied than just Corpse Party and Horizon 3, but man, I'm happy with both of them things.
I see on the Xbox store on PC here that the Halo 5 Forge bundle is available for free.
Yeah, we need to check that out.
Just saying.
We need to check that out. All right, well, let's take a quick break here and return with what we call the news around here.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back.
Black Annis Horror Podcast. The podcast that will change your life forever.
Repetition of the repetition. Is that a word? That is now a word.
Intense.
Zero whatevers.
So insightful that you will question your place in the universe.
You just said you wanted to see somebody stab a fish.
Mind-blowing.
That is not what... That's not... No.
Inspiring.
It's one of two things all the way through. Either predictable or stupid.
Life-changing.
This is going to be filled with spoilers.
Black Annis Horror Podcast. Exclusively available on the Legion Podcast Network.
It's almost like a little advertisement.
Yeah, the advert makes it sound so promising.
All right, we are back. Welcome back to the second half, the back nine of the Shotcast, as we like to think of it. And man, oh man, since we last recorded, has weird stuff happened.
Oh yeah?
So, yeah, but it is not my place, nor my duty, to inform you of such things. For that, we turn to our own man on the street, John Dolan.
Sorry.
I didn't even realize I said it. That's hilarious.
I guess we just gotta start with Palmer Luckey, a misnomer, if I ever heard one.
Yeah, is it luck really? Is that the problem?
I don't know.
It doesn't feel like that, but
for anybody, this happened a while ago now, as of the recording of the show, but I want to get this right. Apparently, there were the backstory to this is that Palmer Luckey donated at one point $10,000 to a group whose main purpose was, quote, shitposting memes that were negative towards Hillary Clinton and pro Trump. And there was some posts that were happening on Reddit, and he was interviewed about this when this news kind of surfaced. And from the article that I read, it's fairly certain to me that he actually at one point admitted that he was this person on Reddit who was also kind of disseminating some of this stuff. But then he later denied that he ever said that. And or was this person on Reddit who was actually doing some of the shit posting also? And
he saw some Donald Trump stuff and he was like, oh, I can just say it didn't happen.
Yeah. So, like, I don't. I don't know what to think about this other than, like, everybody obviously is entitled to their political views and their opinion, and other people are also entitled to disagree with all of those opinions, because that is how America works. But when you are, I mean, this Palmer Luckey is essentially a billionaire. Like, he got, like, $700 million, this is estimated net worth, from the sale of Oculus to Facebook. And at that level of wealth, $10,000 is, I mean, proportionally nothing. But to give, I don't know.
Yeah, well, all right. So I'll tell you, here's what's disappointing to me as an Oculus owner.
Okay.
You know,
this, it's harmful to the company that you work for. This looks bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at their recent Connect event, I don't know that Palmer Luckey was even mentioned at the Oculus Connect. He wasn't there for sure.
And this is not the first time he's had to have been shut down or like handled by Facebook. You know, in the past, it was talking about development and, you know, things behind the Rift that Facebook and Oculus did not want someone out there saying, and like he had to backpedal a bunch of shit, and like, who is fucking babysitting this guy at Oculus and Facebook? It's just, I don't know what you're trying to do. Like, yes, go ahead and support your candidate and do whatever it is that you want, but you have to understand that at some point, like, that's the reason I don't go off on Facebook about politics. I got a lot of views about Donald Trump. I got a lot of views about Hillary Clinton. I got a lot of views about all types of politics, but I don't post that shit in a public forum where, like, people I can work with or have some sort of involvement in my ability to provide food for my family can, like, be offended by it and therefore form some opinion about me. You know, and I'm not in a position where I could actually cause damage to the company I work for just because I'm a high profile person. Like, it just seems totally irresponsible when you start getting to that level.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And you know, what I was kind of getting at before is that it's frustrating to me as an Oculus owner, because I do like the product. And today, as fate would have it, I got my email saying, hey, you are now available to go ahead and do the pre-order for the Oculus Touch, you know, which basically brings it up to the Vive without the room scale, of course. But, you know, now there is a controller just built for VR for the Rift. I'm really excited about the product. The software is starting to, I think, filter in and start to really, it's not totally there yet, but there's definitely more substantive game experiences on the Rift now than there has ever been. And I don't want the platform that I chose to be, I don't want that well poisoned because Palmer Luckey chose to align himself or at least implicitly support a group that, like, it's not just that they have differing political views. That ain't the problem. It's the fact that their whole mission is to do, you know, shit posting is what it was referred to as. Like,
they're just trolling.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for, like, posting things that will be controversial for the sheer sake of pissing people off. Whether they agree with what they're posting or not, the enjoyment that they get out of it is that they rile people up. So at that point, you're not...
It's the worst of the
internet. You're not adding anything to the discourse. Like, you could... I could, you know, anybody can go out and shitpost. I could go post a bunch of negative things about a candidate I support because I enjoy watching people argue about it. Like, that whole side of it is dumb. Like, why? Like, why is that enjoyable? Says the guy who's on the Schadenfreude podcast. But
yeah, but I would argue that our tone is a little lighter than that. You know, like, we're
it's a little ironic.
I mean, we have said over the course of these 40 shows we have definitely said things about individuals and games and companies that are derogatory, but I like to believe we have given some kind of reason, unless it was a joke. And, yeah. You know, what is so frustrating about this is, you know, you're hearing developers talk about pulling support for the Rift, things like that, things that impact me directly. Like, I don't give a tenth of a shit who Palmer Luckey is going to vote for. I have a real problem with him very publicly supporting an organization that is intentionally lowering the discourse of our culture. You know, that's ultimately what their aim is, to bring everyone down to that sewer level of debate.
And it's not just hypothetical that that's going to affect you. It is affecting you. Developers have pulled games from the Rift.
Right.
Because of this.
Yeah. And the demand is pretty much like, hey, we're willing to come back, but you've got to get rid of Palmer Luckey. Like, we don't want to be doing business with a company that's associated with this guy.
Well, and which is their right. I mean, there are companies that have mission statements that they hold very true to. It says, we do not do these kinds of things. We do not, like, numerous issues. We do not outsource work. We don't, you know, our things are not made in sweatshops, that kind of stuff. It's along those lines. Like, suppliers and people who distribute your end product are all entitled to choose whether or not they want to work with you. And if you're giving them such an easy target to make that decision with, that's just a bad business decision. And that is the kind of thing that gets you just removed from the public light of this company. There's no reason for Palmer Luckey to be the face of Oculus anymore. Like, he just fucked that up.
Oh, he can't be. Yeah. And
it's done.
Right. For sure, he is no longer the... But here's the position I think Facebook is in that's kind of difficult, is that they have to continue to push the Rift and be responsible to that product. At the same time, the guy who has been not just the figurehead of the Rift, but kind of, you know, the public face of virtual reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was on the cover of Time or Newsweek or whatever it was, floating over a beach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the guy. And when you see him in interviews, you know, he's a very personable, very smart guy. I think he said some things that, you know, about the product and about, you know, the audience purchasing it and so forth, that are questionable, but not outright offensive.
I think the thing that bothers me most about this story is that, like, he got out even after this was, like, he did the interview with, I think it was like the Daily Beast or somebody that broke the story. But he said, where's the quote? I've got plans. It's something that no campaign is going to run, Luckey said of the proposed billboards that he had funded. I've got plenty of money, Luckey added. Money is not my issue. I thought it sounded like a real jolly good time. Like, I hope that I am never so fucking out of touch that I don't understand the value of $10,000.
You're out of your mind.
That pisses me off.
I hope I'm that rich tomorrow.
To no end.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when someone drops, you know, that much money on you at one given moment. It's kind of like sort of what happened with Notch there for a little bit, where he's just like, he got so rich. And he was just doing kind of weird stuff, you know? Position.
So, you know, I understand...
Yeah,
like that. My criticism lacks the viewpoint of someone who is in that situation, but I would hope, like, I, you know, everybody plays the game where you're like, you know, oh yeah, bought a lottery ticket. You know, what are you going to do if you win? You know, you go around the room and what would you buy for other people? There, you know, it's a fun little social experiment. And I always say whenever that topic comes up, I hope that if I won, I would never forget the value of a $20 bill. You can do a lot with $20. You know, you can stretch $20
stretch
$20 for a long time. So when somebody comes along and just fucking pisses away $10,000 on something, that just is fucking infuriating.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know, maybe to put a button on this Palmer Luckey conversation, I think it's very telling that Facebook has all but buried him in terms of public the public eye. I don't know. I can see this going one of two ways, that they bury him long enough that people forget about it.
Yeah.
Or that they bury him and very quietly release some kind of press statement saying, hey, we've, you know, Palmer Luckey is no longer on the board of Oculus Rift. He's going to start his own software company or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know that that looks good. Yeah. Like I said, I think it's a real tough position that Facebook is in to.
Well, yeah, because if they let him go, does that mean they're endorsing Hillary Clinton? Does that mean, like, there's a political trap there that you have to.
And also, there's, you know, at least 42% of this country, according to recent polls, that would see that as not maybe an implicit endorsement of Hillary Clinton, but certainly a rejection of the concept of free speech.
Whether or not it was an implicit endorsement of Hillary Clinton, it would certainly be spun that way. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Or at the very least that the Rift is Republican or anti-Trump or something like that.
Right. So. And as a corporation, you cannot do that. You just can't.
Yeah. You can't alienate half your North American audience in one fell swoop.
Because that's stupid.
Right. Right.
Why would you do that? Because you're in the business to make money. And that is a great way to not make money.
Yeah. It's
like
he should just decide to sail around the world, you know, just chase his lifelong dream of taking a sailboat around the world by himself.
Yeah.
And then when he's back,
well, that's the problem. Like, he has just through one stupid choice put a whole lot of people in a really hard spot. I mean, sure, your intention was to do something that you thought was, quote, a real jolly good time. But when you did that, like, that quote right there shows me that you just completely are oblivious to how the world works. Because you do not understand that your position in this company has an impact on the perception of that company. Like, he was obviously just doesn't understand that, whatever. Or you never would have decided to do this. Like, a sane person would go, maybe I'll just not connect myself because I like my job and I like millions of dollars. And I work for a bunch of people who would probably be super pissed off if I did this.
Yeah. And I don't mean to keep beating this drum, but in the grander scheme of things, it's not just an issue that Oculus has to deal with. It's an issue that the virtual reality industry, because again, he's the face of it. So if that guy is, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that maybe he was not actively involved and maybe completely aware of the worst of what this organization did.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But to me, it's like when I see one of my friends on Facebook post, like, complain about their job on Facebook. That's so stupid. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you possibly put your employment in jeopardy in a public forum?
Unless you just don't care at that point. And maybe that's it.
Yeah, I mean, if, like, your job really sucks and, like, you don't give a shit if you get fired, fine. But, like, if you're planning on going in on Monday and on Friday, you're like, my boss is a fucking retard. Like, Jesus, what an idiot. That's suicide.
Right. Dolan in my office right now. First of all, we don't use the R word.
Yep.
Everything else tracked, but that offended me.
What?
All right.
Say whatever I want, man.
I got mad virtual reality dollars. No, you don't, John.
That's right.
You're living in a dream world. Just, yeah. All right. Yeah. What's all right. up next?
Anyway, I feel like I can just say the same thing over and over, like, in 50.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's so weird. On a number of levels. Yes.
So at the same time, in the new Hitman level, which I talked about earlier, there was you're just walking through the map and there's a NPC standing there and he's obviously talking about Donald Trump right in the middle of this map. And kind of, I guess, I mean, after just having the conversation we had, it's weird to draw a line to where this is okay. The guy walks up and the NPC says something about a guy with a presidential candidate with a quote famous hairdo, and then continues to talk about, and you're on this, you know, militant, you know, paramilitary organization camp where they're planning, you know, crimes and things like that. And the guy continues on. The guy seems so well composed and has such a fine academic way to use his arguments.
That seems ironic. Yeah.
I know. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that that kind of stuff is showing up in games. There was in a previous map, there was another one where it was two guys sitting around a pool and they were saying things like, I could make my country great again, an obvious reference to Donald Trump. So it's just, it's, you know, bleeding into everything. I don't know. It's hard to avoid. Election season in the United States is
let's not minimize the fact that this is the weirdest election that this country has seen in some time.
I'd have to agree. Yeah.
What were you going to say, Justin, though? I'm sorry, I felt like I cut you off there.
I was going to say, isn't the Hitman, the studio that makes Hitman, are they not, I don't believe they're based in America, are they?
They are not.
Okay.
So that is it. Yeah, they are, you know, an outside country commenting on.
So that's the, you know, the way that game is actually released has sort of probably let them add stuff like that, which is also very cool.
Yeah. It's interesting. I always love glimpses of other countries' views on the country that I live in.
Yes.
I appreciate alternate viewpoints to, you know, what I get on the airwaves here. I'm always more than welcome to know what other people think of what is going on here. I think that kind of shit is fascinating.
Yeah, I get a fair amount of that from my my Scottish pal, Duncan. And I'm kind of tired of hearing it now.
I mean, you give as good as you get, though.
Yeah, but the downside is that Scotland's government right now is one of the most like progressive and forward-thinking countries around. So I don't really have a lot of places to tag them on.
We got more missiles.
Yeah. Oh, we could blow the ever living shit out of Scotland. There is no question about that. And
you don't
want
to fuck with Scots, dude. You don't want to fuck with Scots. You just don't.
No, we're not going to. I'm not trying to mess with them. I'm trying to blow them all.
I'm trying to eradicate them from the face of the planet.
Dude, I'm Scottish. We're like fucking cockroaches, man. You can't. There's no way.
Honestly, if you can survive haggis, you can certainly survive nuclear war.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, I got the mix. I'm Scottish and Irish.
Me too.
Yeah. Drinking problem that loves a rainy day.
My wife's got a great mix. She's Irish, she's German, and she's American Indian. Like, talk about some ancestry that likes to drink and fuck you up.
for sure. And also eventually disappear from the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Moving on. I want to get this right. It just says Gambling Commission in the title. The Washington State Gambling Commission has, I'm reading this from Eurogamer.net, has set its sights on Valve over the proliferation of third-party sites using Steam's skin trading system as a method of facilitating gambling. That's a problem. When the government starts getting involved, like the fucking Gambling Commission is shining their fucking eye of Sauron on your company because you can't get this shit
like
under control.
As long as it comes with like the sound of a tuba or something turning towards. Right. you skin gambling website.
I mean, I just the fact that there's a state sanctioned agency that is about gambling is that's kind of funny to me in the first place. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to fuck with those guys. You know, they'll take your dice away. They'll take it all away. They'll say, oh, you were using this building while you did this thing we didn't like? That building's ours now.
Right. And welcome to six-digit fines. Enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Steam, Valve's got a lot of cash. I'm sure they can.
And that's another company I would not want to see in court. Talk about deep pockets.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like, finally, we have something to spend all this money on.
Yeah. I mean,
we're clearly not making Half-Life 3. Let's just get litigious.
Or are we?
Right. No, we're not.
You're soaking in it. You're playing Half-Life 3 right now.
Right. The final move is that all of us take off the visor and realize that this has all been the Matrix all along.
No, it's that everybody's like, oh shit, like Valve isn't backing down. They're taking us to court. They're going to fucking fight it. Like they want to have all these gambling sites, and then it all comes to a head when the court date finally arrives, and it's a fucking huge story in the video games industry, and the fucking G-Man walks in with his briefcase and lays it down, and he's the lawyer for Valve.
Opens up the briefcase, presents the box for the game, and like, Your Honor, I have but one piece of evidence. Half-Life 3 available now. You know.
And then nobody cares about gambling anymore, and the internet fucking goes into meltdown
mode. Right, right. It would be the equivalent of the scene from Airplane when they're like, hey, everyone remain calm, and they do the shot of the cabin.
Does anyone know how to fly a plane?
You know, and it's like people like sitting on top of seats banging on each other. That's what it would be. It would be mass hysteria.
So, I mean, we've read stories about this previously where Valve was starting to crack down on this kind of shit, banning people from the site that were running these gambling sites and shit. So, I mean, I don't know where this is going to go. It's the government who has deep pockets fighting a company who has deep pockets over gambling, which is legal in a lot of places. Like, you start getting into the, why isn't this legal? Or are we protecting people from themselves? Like, that whole debate gets really complicated really fast. So, I don't know. Not sure what to think of all of that. What I know is that you shouldn't gamble with digital things because that's stupid, because they don't exist.
Yeah, yeah. I bet, yes. Let's be honest, Sean, this is bottom line. just, you know... A simulacrum of nonsense. The whole social structure is. I'm sorry, I'm making a larger global point that's inappropriate for the show.
Yeah. Nothing matters.
Once you embrace the fact that everything is ultimately meaningless, it really frees you up.
It does. Yeah. Like it's all, you know. Eventually, our sun's going to explode, and if we're still sitting here when that happens, it's all over. Doesn't matter. And if we go somewhere else, it's all the heat death of the universe thing. You know, get to that. It's like eventually everything. Just,
you know. All right. We'll get off this completely morbid topic in a second, but I got to share a quote with you that I've always loved. But it's the notion of the two deaths. There is the first death where you physically die. And the second death is the last time anyone ever says your name.
Yeah, I love that.
I've always loved that because that is the meaninglessness of which I speak. Of at that point, no matter who you are or what you did, it didn't ever matter that you lived.
Because nobody remembers you.
Right, right. And that is the death of a salesman fate in store for us all, ultimately. I mean, there are exceptions, like Bono will certainly be remembered long past me, but even he will be forgotten.
What you got against Bono, man?
Have you heard the last few U2 albums?
Okay, no. Yes, that. Okay, but
the musical abortions performed and thrust into our iPhones.
Tell us. I mean, give us an honest assessment here, man.
Here's the thing. I love early U2.
Who doesn't? It's great.
Yeah. Of course it is.
It only goes so far. It only goes so far.
Yeah, like, Joshua Tree is a hard stop. Like, once you
I'm a fan of Octane Baby as well. I don't know why we're talking about U2, but since we're here.
Okay, in fairness, Octane Baby has some good stuff.
There's some good shit on that record.
Yeah, but where? So does it go wrong at, is it like Zootopia?
Zootopia. Yeah, like there's a couple of good songs on there.
Yeah, but it's not a great album. And that was that Zootopia tour was Bono kind of being Bono.
Bono, yeah.
I mean, like, he does good work for a lot of important causes, but kind of fuck Bono, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
So here you go. Instead of pissing away $10,000 on buying a bunch of shit post memes or whatever it was that he did, like, use that money to ensure that you will live forever. Because that's what Gabe Newell's
doing. Or eradicate Bono.
You know that could. Well, hey, you know.
Sorry. I'm done. I swear.
I'm not advocating that. I'm saying it's a better use of money than shit posting. Fucking memes.
All right. That's worse than what I said. So, yeah, we're good to go now.
Next. Talking about fucked up shit that's just crazy. No Man's Sky. The controversy around that will not fucking die.
I mean,
the UK Advertising Authority has officially announced that they're investigating Hello Games for false advertising. The last time I checked, I haven't looked for a while. I should check right now to see what the player count on Steam. It dipped below 1,000 concurrent players like a week or two ago. It went from 250,000 concurrent players to under 1,000 players in just, you know, a month and a half. It's bad. And Hello Games and Sean Murray specifically have not said anything publicly since like August 18th.
Man.
It is October 6th today. Obviously, they're working on the game. Obviously, they are, like, they're doing something. I don't know if fucking radio silence is the right approach. I understand why they're doing it, because there is so much fucking hate for that studio and Sean Murray specifically swirling around on the internet right now that I don't think there's anything they can say that is going to calm down those critics at all. And then last week, video game dude, Jeff Keighley, he's the guy that started, what's the award show that he started recently?
I think it's just called the Video Game Awards, right?
The Video Game Awards. Yeah, I mean, he's been a personality in video games for a long time and like the critical side of things. And he was recently talking about it on his podcast, excuse me, Live with YouTube Gaming, episode 1. You can listen to it on YouTube. I'm trying to find the time code. A ways into the podcast, he starts talking the 107-minute mark in the video.
107 minutes? Jesus Christ, he should do this show.
Right? He started talking about some interactions that he had with Sean Murray and the Hello Games team, and he said, the last time I saw Sean Murray, he told me he didn't really want to be around me much anymore because he thought I was being a little too negative about the game and my assessment of where I thought the team was at. They were under an incredible amount of pressure, he added. He went on to say that he was against them charging $60 for the game. He kind of had like some early access to see the game in development and has come out and said that he had a lot of concerns, and he voiced those to Hello Games. And when they said they were going to sell it for $60, he told them that he thought that was a mistake, and their relationship kind of started to sour after that. Jeff Keighley went on to say that he said that it should have been a early access game at a lower price point. He had a lot of, he wasn't like really being nasty. He was just kind of saying, here's how I see it. This is what I think went wrong with this.
I agree with that.
And I mean, whether you're, or, yeah, whether or not you think Jeff Keighley has, like, what he says holds any weight, like, he's a, you know, fairly important personality in games journalism. He's been around for a long time. You know, he's,
I thought,
created an award show that was successful.
Yeah, that last one was, you know, was actually pretty good. It was a pretty good show.
He debuted, yeah, I mean, the debut of, like, the first time anybody ever heard of No Man's Sky was on his show. So he's kind of connected to it, and, you know, he's kind of come out and joined the criticism of the way that they handled things. It's interesting, you know, I mean, the fact that there's actually a government agency investigating them, I'm sure that's just based on, you know, consumer complaints. Whether or not that's going to go anywhere, who knows? But like, I hope they come out with something soon. Because there's parts of that game that I really enjoy, and I, like Justin and I have both said several times, like, there's a great base to that game that needs more stuff, and I really hope that they don't just abandon it. Like, the temptation of a studio that just made millions and millions of dollars to just say fuck it and walk away from games development entirely, like, that must be a real strong pull right now with all the shit that's going around on the internet about them.
Yeah. I hope the conversation was more, they're right, it's broken, let's fix it, you know, and then they're just working on it.
And that is the only way to salvage it right now. Yeah. Like, they need to, like, there's a take the money and walk away, and basically you will never work in the games industry again if you do that. Or, you know, show that you truly believe in this product that you've created, which they seem to. You know, like, they seem to have a lot of heart, and this is a very small team, and you don't get into that, you know, the games development business if it's not something that you truly love, because it's apparently a super hard industry to survive in, and making these games is extremely complicated. So, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt until I hear otherwise. I really hope that they're trying to add more to it, and they're going to put it out and be like, they don't need to come out and apologize, in my mind. They need to just come out and say, hey, look, we made this stuff, and we think it makes the game better, and they need to reopen a dialogue with players and fans and critics of the game and say, they need to make some sort of statement saying, we plan to continue to support this game. Give us your feedback on what do you think of this? Going radio silent, I think, is a huge mistake, though.
Yeah, I don't see the harm in saying, like, making just one statement. You don't have to make a big press tour, but just saying, yeah, we hear you. As fans of the game, we appreciate the feedback. Let us, you know, we're going to shut the door, and we're going to fix some things. We're going to change some things. And when we come back, we think it's going to be a better experience for all of you. We'll see you in 6 weeks, you know.
But it's that communication issue we were just talking about. This industry has become, there's like a trust that you need to maintain with your customers, essentially. I mean, it's a service industry. You are delivering a product to people, and if you fuck with those people, they will not buy your product anymore, and you will no longer exist. So just be honest. Like I said, I don't think they need to apologize. I think they just need to come out and say, this is what we're doing. And I really hope they do, because just like, I can't even, I was reading, because it was interesting, just the level of hate on, like, the No Man's Sky, the game Reddit forum, which, oh, did you guys see all that shit?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Jesus, the fucking mod, the head mod for the r No Man's Sky, the game subreddit, made this post saying, yeah, this turned into like a shithole, and I really don't like the vibe here. And this, you know, was originally here for people to just talk about the game in like a constructive way, and it's turned into not that. So I am shutting down the subreddit. And he just closed it. And people went fucking berserk. to the point where like Reddit itself got involved, and it's last I checked, it's been reopened with new mods.
Yeah.
And it was because like it was a huge subreddit. It had like 264,000 subscribers or something like that. And like Reddit doesn't want that to just disappear. That's fucking money for them. So like everything around this game is just so fucked up right now. And I think it could all be fixed. Now, maybe not, you know, everybody's going to be super happy, but like you could at least begin to repair whatever damage has been done by just starting to talk.
Yeah, because, so, you know, do that. This whole thing is starting to take on that musky aroma of tire fire. And it feels like they need to kind of squash this pretty quick.
Yeah, it needs to happen soon. I understand why it hasn't happened yet, because like when you're starting to talk about legal repercussions, being sued, things like that, the last thing you want to do is give those people any more fuel. But at the same time, they're like, you're running out of supporters.
I think you just don't want to ever get to the point where you're going to be getting sued because you didn't, you know.
It's too late.
Like, yeah, I mean, for them, it's too late. But I think for anyone going forward, you know, who is making a game and maybe is getting a little bit outside of the scope of what they can actually accomplish, I think hopefully those people will try and use this as an example of sort of what not to do.
Yeah, and I can't entirely fault Hello Games and Sean Murray because they got fucking death threats because they delayed their game for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking ridiculous. So why would you want to talk to these fucking people?
Well, yeah. If your only feedback from fans is violence and profanity,
yeah,
as opposed
fucking
to
die, because yeah,
you know,
give me a break.
Right, right.
Yeah. So like it's just hard all around. Like it's extremely unfortunate because I love video games. I love playing video games. I want there to be more video games. And some of the things that No Man's Sky does are advancements in video games. The things that they have built, other people will iterate on and make video games better. And I want them, they're some smart guys. I want them to continue to do cool things. So I hope they can turn it around.
Oh, for sure. And you know, the name of the show is Schadenfreude.
I'm not enjoying this one, though.
I agree. Hourly concurrent players for No Man's Sky, 1,001.
Yeah.
The peak today appears to be just shy of 2,200.
It's
not great.
No. I mean, the game's got problems, but I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, yeah.
Making any top 10 lists this year, that's for sure. Nobody's...
Depends on the category.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can see a real argument for biggest mess.
What's Giant Bomb always has the hottest mess category. I always like that one.
Yeah.
For sure. Winner.
Number one with a bullet, No Man's Sky. If you want, that's what we ought to do is actually do like Giant Bomb predictions a la Johnny Carson. And biggest mess by far and away, No Man's Sky. Nothing else even close this year.
Ubisoft has been fighting off Vivendi. Is it Vivendi Communications? I forget their entire title, but giant, super, what are they, multimedia conglomerate, what I've heard them referred to as. They have, like, movie studios, they have television interests. They've been buying up Ubisoft stock for quite some time, and the Ubisoft had their investor conference, their stockholder meeting, and there was kind of a big to-do where people were thinking that Vivendi was actually going to make some sort of play to get its own members on the board and gain some sway in how the company is run. That didn't happen, but now it seems as if Vivendi is going to go the hostile takeover route for Ubisoft. Ubisoft does not want to sell their company to Vivendi, so it's interesting.
Gotta really want something to do it like that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Steep is coming out pretty soon. I'm kidding. That's not the bait. but you know, the Assassin's Creed stuff is still real popular, and
yeah, I mean they've got some valuable properties for sure. But like they've had some issues in the past as well. Like they're famous for the same thing that No Man's Sky just did, where they overpromise and underdelivered. Like Ubisoft is the fucking poster child for that.
Oh man, that Assassin's Creed Unity is pretty good.
Yeah, and it's the same. Like I sent out the video for Wildlands to you guys a couple days ago. That new, like that game looks cool, but it's an Ubisoft game, and I know that their games always look really cool before you play them. So,
I think that one's gonna be a little bit better, though.
That's what I said about The Division, man.
I know.
And I like that game. I like that game a lot, but it is totally not what they said it was going to be. So
I'll tell you though, with my track record as I think the guy who recognized earliest that maybe The Division wasn't great, I will say that that Wildlands thing I'm excited for. You know,
it's got a Phantom Pain vibe to it that I really like. So we'll see.
Yeah, multiplayer kind of multiplayer co-op Phantom Pain sounds pretty fantastic.
There is multiplayer in Phantom Pain,
but it's not.
What?
It's weird.
Oh yeah, that's the big okay. Like the online stuff. Not
yeah. It's it's in there.
I want to be able to just invite you into my game and then us go fuck shit up.
Yeah. You want co-op multiplayer? What you want is Rainbow Six Vegas.
Yes, right. But more open world. Like that's the appeal, I think, of Wildlands, is that it seems like it's a little more freewheeling.
Yep.
And that's
totally what I want too. Like GTA 5 did not do that.
I mean,
totally wanted it.
It's like the Far Cry game we always wanted with Wildlands, where you can actually, bum around an island with your buddies and just blow stuff up.
I think it's actually just a smidge closer to Just Cause.
Yeah, the multiplayer mod for that is some crazy shit.
Right, but it's so insane. It's not like playing the game. But if in Just Cause, if I could invite you in, and what Wildlands looks like, it might have that kind of freedom.
Yeah.
But, a little bit cleaner and a little more serious, not... Totally
sounds like self-serious. You're talking about a little game called Arma 3.
Yeah, that's exactly what I had serious. In mind.
Not that serious. I don't want to get that
right.
Serious.
Like I'm looking for that 80s action movie vibe, and that's kind of what I'm getting from Wildlands so far.
Yeah, I mean it looks cool. I'm excited to see. I love like a multiplayer co-op. Style game I had tons of fun with Yubo playing the Splinter Cell.
Oh yeah,
the last couple of Conviction and Blacklist. Yeah. That was great. But like, if you could have like more players, would just make that even better. So, give me that.
So yeah, I for one can't wait for Vivendi's Wildlands.
Well, they have a 23% stake in the company right now, so. They're trying to buy as much stock as they can.
Oh, I could go for a steak. All right. what's next?
More Valve news. Let's see. There's a company. I want to get their name right so we can all laugh and point. Digital Homicide. A company that makes the games that they distribute on the Steam. Decided it would be a good idea to sue people that were... reviewing their games poorly. They started with a somewhat famous game critic, Jim Sterling. I believe he used to work at Destructoid. Now I believe he's just an independent critic. They sued him for $10 million for posting rude video reviews of their games. A lawsuit which still has not settled. Then they decided, hey, let's start suing people on Steam. Digital Homicide developer James Romney is now suing 100 users of Valve's digital distribution platform for $18 million for the heinous crime of leaving bad reviews of their games and saying bad things about the company.
That makes them smart.
Just going to let that one float for a minute. Makes me smart. In response to this, Valve removed all of Digital Homicide's games from Steam.
I mean, what did they think was going to happen?
Yeah. Let's see what their quote was. The lawsuit recently filed is solely in regards to the individuals where no resolution was able to be obtained from Steam to provide a safe environment for us to conduct business, Digital Homicide said. We submitted numerous reports and sent multiple emails in regards to individuals making personal attacks, harassment, and more on not only us, but other Steam customers who were actually interested in our products. Yes, like, the comments section is fucking minefield of crap. But, like, can you sue people for posting their opinions?
Yeah.
Well,
no. Welcome to the
party,
pal.
I don't particularly like...
I mean, now you get to be criticized like every
other
game.
I don't like this kind of shit where some one user said he wants to, quote, murder every single person responsible for this game. You've crossed a line with your comment. That's stupid. Like, I hope they ban that user from Steam because that's a bunch of crap. And then another guy who said James Romney should kill himself for making me waste 0.14 hours for your shit game. Like, really? He should fucking kill himself? Like, come on. Like, that kind of stuff's not helping, but, like, suing people for that is not the right response.
I think saying that you want someone to kill themselves online should have a speeding ticket level fine attached to it now.
Sure.
You know, like, it costs you $150 every time you do it. You gotta really mean it.
Like, I mean, if you were in public and there's a police officer standing there and you walked up to someone and said, I'm gonna murder you and everyone that works for you, the police are going to arrest you and you're going to be charged with
crime. At least ask you a question or two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that shit doesn't fly. So, is it okay to do online? You know, probably not. But, I don't know. This shit is just getting so weird. So then, next article. A couple days later, Digital Homicide files to dismiss its case against all Steam users.
Because they don't have any money.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other problem is, like, once you get into the legal system, that gets super fucking expensive. So, yeah, so it was, like, a big thing, and now it's, like, not a thing again. So, I don't know. I don't see an end to any of this kind of stuff anytime soon. Like, when you... I mean, it wasn't that long ago where there was not any sort of a review system for products that, as a consumer, you had any sort of access to. Like, that's a relatively recent development in consumerism.
I don't know. Like, Popular Mechanics had its review section. I mean, yeah, not user reviews, but...
Yeah, then that's the thing. Like, I'm talking strictly, like, user reviews.
Oh, okay,
like,
okay, sorry.
When did that start? The internet. That's when that started. So, you know, 20, 25 years... The internet's been a thing, and, like, the first time I really, like, I remember there was one holiday season where I just decided, hey, I'm going to buy all of my Christmas presents for all the people I'm getting presents for this year. I'm going to do it all online. And I remember all my friends thinking I was nuts because they're just like, well, how do you know they're going to send this shit to you? And how, like, it was, you know, infancy of Amazon and eBay, and those things were just starting to happen. And I did all of my shopping and I saved tons of money and it worked fucking great. And it was kind of a miracle because there was no, like, real, other than maybe eBay at the time, there was no real, you know, ratings systems employed. Like, eBay was kind of one of the pioneers of that type of shit. And now we're at the point where like, I can't imagine going onto eBay and saying, yeah, you know, I bought this thing from this dude and I think he should fucking kill himself.
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it. Like, can we all just not be fucking, you know, 13 years old? Can we just try to be a little more civil to one another, I guess? That would solve a lot of this shit.
No.
I'm telling you, like, real names.
We all hate each other.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally. I'm 100%. I also think people's license plates on their car should be their fucking phone number.
Well, let's not get crazy.
Yeah, yeah, come on.
No, that'd be so good.
Hey, asshole. Yeah, you in the Lexus.
Hey, I'm behind you right now.
That I'm guy gonna you murder cut off. You.
I mean, that's the fastest way to get to Mad Max right there. Put phone numbers on license plates.
Well, yeah, that I agree with.
Oh, man. Okay. I don't remember putting the story in the list here, but I'm going to open it up, take a look at it. Star Citizen's first-person shooting changes coming along nicely.
Yeah.
What the hell is the story about, Justin? Did you read this? So you that's kind of what you mentioned earlier, right?
Yeah. Well, this is just...
Oh, no. Yeah, this was the stabilization
the
thing.
The vesticular ocular reflex.
Ooh. What is that? That sounds like gagging on a dick. What is that?
That's just like...
that's what it is.
When you run, your eyes don't... Your eyeballs stabilize the image that you see to some degree.
They got shock absorbers.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you ever seen the video where the guy's like holding the chicken and the chicken's head just stays in the same spot even though he's moving the body all around?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a... same idea, but inside your eyeball.
It's like a Steadicam,
yeah.
Essentially.
So,
and they have added that functionality to the first person view in Star Citizen, which was something that I've complained about on this very show, was that it was really kind of jumpy and slidey, and I didn't care for it very much.
So now it should be a lot better.
Yeah.
And
no, that looked great. Yeah. That video looks really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Star Citizen.
So,
give that game a lot of airtime.
Yeah. And well, the last time we played, we had a real good time, and we ought to do that again soon.
Well, yeah. After Sunday, there will be actual, like, some fleshed out missions we can do with, I believe, the new like planets that like the first iteration of the new planets. So I'm going to be playing it a lot next week. All
right, let me know. I'm in. We'll.
It will be a nice big hunk of a download on Monday or Tuesday, but whatever.
I got fat pipes. Yeah.
Fat pipes.
Goddamn.
Since the cigar shop. Around the corner from your house.
Fat pipes.
Yeah.
Nidhogg 2. Anyone? Check that shit out.
I checked it out. I'm following
it. It's got a totally different style to it. It's got like an arcade-y, kind of 90s arcade look to it, I guess.
I really hope that they don't just completely abandon the old art style, because that was one of the main selling points for me for that game was... just the look of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it. I have had endless hours of fun on Nidhogg because we, at a place I used to work, just had it hooked up to a big screen TV with two different controllers, and we would just do tournaments at lunch like every other day.
That would be such a fun game to have in a cabinet.
Yes, it's perfect. It is the best party game because there's just enough amount of chance with it that. You get in these long back and forth battles, especially if you're
there's good swings in that game too.
Oh yeah. Especially if two people have been playing it for a while and know how to manipulate it a little bit better, you can really go back and forth for a long time. It's a lot of fun.
I don't know. I kind of like this new style because to me it's kind of like there's almost like a time dilation going on here. Like the original Nidhogg looks like something that would have come out in the 80s. And now this new one looks like, oh man, Nidhogg 2 is out. And look at the fucking graphics. They're fantastic. Yeah. And you're like maybe 93, you know, it's kind of got like that thing going on.
And they're known for having a unique art style with every single one of their games looks different than the last one. So, I mean, it makes sense for them.
It kind of looks to me like the arcade version of Rygar. That's what the screenshots look like to me. I fucking love that game in the arcade. But they've added like some new axe throwing mechanics and some other shit in there. But yeah, I mean, I love the original Nidhogg. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm very very interested in this one.
I already talked about the Death Star expansion in Battlefront.
Yeah. Yep.
Destiny, Bo.
I've heard of that game.
Like I've watched some videos about the expansion for it, and it's like I'm done with that game. Like when Destiny 2 comes out, which is my next story here, there's rumors that it will be coming to PC, and that they're doing a total overhaul on the way that that game works. The rumors are that like your character that you built up in Destiny 1 will not carry over. There's some debate about whether or not that's a good idea. But the specific story that I pulled, which illustrates perfectly to me why I'm not going to play Destiny anymore, is there was a exotic weapon that was released, and in order to obtain it, there was actually an ARG, an alternate reality game, that users had to figure out, puzzle out, and try to find their way into this thing. Let me just read this description here. This is from Polygon. It kicked off after players discovered a chest in Rise of Iron, which is a new expansion, that they could not open because it was blocked by 5 lasers. They soon found monitors that triggered the lasers, but only 4 of them. The 5th monitor would take a bit more effort. Where is it? Destiny players had to crowdsource the solution, writing scripts to compile and translate massive amounts of data in order to turn garbled text into hex code for more than 900 image files. Then they had to combine those images as you would a jigsaw puzzle, and once they pieced the puzzle together, they recognized the larger image as a diagram of a particular room in the raid. This image points out 4 cylinders in the room. Stepping on them enables the monitors in the previous area to be activated. The process from here that involves translating binary code into numerals, and it results in an exotic engram, an emblem, and access to the 5th monitor. Activating the last monitor opens up the path to the chest, which you can open after beating the raid. Within the chest is a quest called Channeling the Corruption, which will lead to the unique weapon.
So go here, go here, go here, and then go here.
Like, I'll never do that. There's no. Even, like, the fact that it's already all been figured out, there's no way I'm going to go through that amount of shit to get a fucking gun in your game that once you get the gun, you don't have anywhere to use it because you've already beat the fucking content. Like, I don't know. Destiny's such a weird game.
Yeah. It the lack of repeatability in that game is...
Yeah. Like, once you play through part of it, it's just kind of over.
It doesn't help that they recycle the environments the way they do. It's, you know, there are times in that game where you're just like, oh, here again, you know. But there are also incredibly fun moments in that game. So it's...
The shooting in Destiny is some of the best shooting I've played in a video game. It's fucking great. It's super fun to just shoot guys in that game, but all of the bullshit that you got to go through to just do that is such a pain in the ass. Like, I really hope that they put Destiny 2 out on PC, because then I won't have to sit through fucking loading screen on the PS4 anymore. That's huge. Like, that shit takes forever.
Yeah, and kind of with regard to them ditching the character, like, when, you know, that was the thing, that there's no carryover of your character from the original game. And my reaction was, so what about that? Because I didn't care enough about the story or the personality of the character I was playing to...
If you showed me a picture of my character from Destiny that I spent numerous hours with and told me it was just some random, a picture of some guy, like, I wouldn't recognize that it was mine.
Oh, I would know mine.
Like, I don't
he was emo as fuck. It was the best.
I don't know. I just like what, because for me it wasn't like I took no stock in making the character look cool. it's like, oh, well, this armor is better than that armor, so I would just put it on. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know. Destiny is such a weird game. I hate the fact that there's, like, 15 different currencies, and you have to know what all of them are for in that game. Like, this is way too complicated. I just want to shoot people in the fucking head.
Yeah, I want to do what Borderlands did, only this pretty in space.
Yeah.
Where I shoot stuff, and it gives me stuff, and then I put that stuff on so I can shoot stuff better.
Yeah. And when you shoot a gun in Destiny, there's a weight to it. Like, it just feels good. And
it's great. Yes.
That's hard to do in games. There's so many games that don't have that, and that is such a big part of a first-person shooter. Once you get that, just peel away all this extra crap and just give me that over and over and over. But it just doesn't do that. So, I don't know. Anyway, hopefully they work all that shit out in Destiny 2.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'd love to play the Destiny game that could be.
Yeah. Titanfall 2 released some 60 frames per second gameplay footage. That game looks interesting. I'm looking forward to that coming out. I think I'm probably going to try that. Battlefield 1, the open beta, they came out and said that they had 13.2 million players access the beta. That's huge.
Yeah.
And then they also released a trailer showing the single-player campaign, which looked pretty cool. I'm also excited to try that. I think I'm going to be drowning in shooters, though, and some of them are gonna not get bought. Like, I don't know. Do I need Titanfall 2 and Battlefield 1? Probably not. But they both look great so far. I mean, I think I'm going to err more on the set. Like, when does Wildlands come out? That's not till like later in 2017. So, like a game, like if that game was coming out at the same time as Battlefield 1 and Titanfall, I would probably err on the side of Wildlands. I think I like that style better.
Yeah, I didn't get into the Battlefield 1 beta. I don't know.
It was fun. I mean, it's a Battlefield game. Yeah. Like, that's my only concern is, like, am I going to get bored with this? Because, like, I didn't play Battlefield 4. Like, I didn't miss it enough to really care. Like, I had a ton of fun with Battlefield 3, but I think it was just because I didn't really have anything else going on then, and it was kind of the only shooter going at that point. And I was in, like, extreme Call of Duty burnout mode, so I don't know. PlayStation Plus free games for October. Resident Evil HD, a remastered version of the 2002 Resident Evil GameCube remake, is free on PlayStation 4. When did they start? I think, what was today, the 6th? I think today's the day that they start being free. And then also, the one I actually am interested in, Transformers Devastation. Have you guys seen that one at all?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That looks pretty cool. I've seen some gameplay of that. It looks pretty fun. Like, transform back and forth and it makes the cool transformer sound and then you blow shit up. Like, it's kind of got a cool cell shaded look to it, so I've thought about buying that game a couple of times, but I could never like justify the price, and free is totally the right price, so get some
and
of that.
I'm actually real down for that Resident Evil game this month. I'll
certainly download it and give it a try.
I think that actually gives you the option of losing the tank controls. So that it operates, you know, not totally like a modern shooter or anything, but, you know, certainly more elegant than the tank stuff. So I'd love to play that game again in a way that didn't frustrate the hell out of me.
How have the games with gold lineup, that is the free monthly games on Microsoft, how have those been? I haven't been really keeping up with them.
For the original Forza Horizon for the 360 was one recently, and that's one I enjoyed quite a bit. This month, I believe it's Assassin's Creed China, you know, that kind of offshoot.
Okay.
Assassin's Creed game. And that
sounds decent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
The upcoming month here doesn't look... It's Super Mega Baseball Extra Innings,
which is available now, and
yeah, and then MX versus ATV Reflex.
I don't know about that,
like,
either.
And then also I Am Alive, which was a kind of half a game from
several years ago now. I think I have that on PC, and I played about an hour of it and went, eh.
Eh, for free, I'll check it out.
Yeah,
hasn't been stellar, but I don't know, man. I hate to be one of those people that's like, hey, the games that you're giving me for free aren't games I'm interested in.
Aren't good enough. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a draw. It's a reason to pick one console over the other, and it seems to me like PlayStation has been doing that better.
Speaking of comment sections, you should check that out, those announcement pages where it's like, hey, this month's free games are this, and it's just, I'm canceling my PlayStation Plus subscription. This is bullshit. All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. It blows my mind.
I know. If you have one of those consoles, go get those free games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try not to complain too much about it.
That Resident Evil what was the other other one that they're releasing this month?
Transformers.
Oh yeah, Transformers. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a good combo though. I'd like to check both those out.
Yeah, I mean, like, those are both, like, the Transformers game is a game that I'm, like, legitimately interested in. And, oh, shit, it's free. All right. Fuck yeah. I'm glad I'm paying for PlayStation Plus, you know? So, and they've had a bunch of those. Like, they fucking gave away Rocket League, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, you earn a lot of goodwill with that one alone. Like, you give me one of those a year, and I'm happy.
I mean, it's been good. Like, from month to month, there's always at least something on there I'm interested in. Like, they did a couple of, you know, indie ones. They did that kind of Robotron clone, Ultratron, a while ago, and that game's fun. It's not huge or anything, but there's been some good shit on there.
They dropped Grim Fandango Remastered a while back, and I was like, that's kind of a nice cut.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Like,
something I may have bought at some point on sale on Steam, you know? Now I don't have to. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a good service. Yeah. Even with them raising prices, you know, that came up recently on the show as well. But I still think there's plenty of value there. God willing, if they ever just picked up those download speeds, me and PlayStation Plus would be doing just fine together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it could be a lot worse, I guess, if you want to start playing that game, but
yeah.
Blizzard is dropping the Battle.net name, which seems like a weird decision, and they're just going to call it Blizzard Tech. Why, I don't know. Blizzard said today that it will be transitioning away from using the Battle.net name when referring to its online multiplayer game service. We created Battle.net. The idea of including a tailored online gaming service together with your game was more of a novel concept when we recreated it. So we put a lot of focus on explaining what the service was and how it worked, including giving it a distinct name, Blizzard wrote. Over time, though, we've seen that there's been occasional confusion and inefficiencies related to having two separate identities under which everything falls, Blizzard and Battle.net. Given that built-in multiplayer support is a well-understood concept and more of a normal expectation these days, there isn't much of a need to maintain a separate identity for what is essentially our networking technology. So they decided to call it Blizzard Tech, which is a different name than Blizzard. What? What? I don't know. Like, Battle.net is just kind of a cool name. I don't know.
Yeah, I like it too.
It's like, I equate it to like changing the name of your restaurant from Kentucky Fried Chicken to KFC. Why? 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 Everybody knows what Kentucky Fried Chicken is. Why fuck with that?
Just because people shorten it on their end, you don't have to change your name because of that. But this,
that's because they're in the know. It's like, yeah, man, you want to go to KFC?
Yeah, but they did that at the height of the like fried foods is bad era. And
Yeah, like you're
trying to hide it. Yeah, like that's what does the F stand for? Fun. Kentucky Fun Chicken.
Kentucky fucking chicken. Bitch. Eat it. Shut up. It's delicious. That's all you need to know about Kentucky Fried Chicken. Go get some of those fucking biscuits and your fucking eyes will roll back in your head. Shit's so good.
I got held at gunpoint at a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Did you?
Yeah, true story.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was a good time. It was a real fun. got locked in a cooler.
Really? Was it?
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah, totally. It was fun.
Justin, you said you picked up Devil Daggers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. My current record is still like 86 seconds. I can't beat that score. Yeah. I fucking suck at Devil Daggers.
It is a frustrating game to play, but it's fun.
It is fun. It is fun. They have a new mode that is a top-down replays mode, which sounds kind of interesting. I haven't checked it out yet, but the screenshots look kind of cool. I think like that might actually be more valuable to me than like the regular replay system that they have in there. Like being able to see... One of the coolest things I think about that game is that you can look at the leaderboards and see the people who just are insanely good at that game, and you can watch replays of their record runs. And being able to see that from like a top-down view, I think that sounds really cool because you can kind of get more of a spatial idea of like if they're running some kind of a pattern or something like that. So, I don't know. I'm looking to improve my Devil Daggers.
The video is very cool. It definitely looks like if you watch someone who knew what they were doing, you would pick up some stuff.
Yeah. Like, I kind of want to see like a heat map feature in that game to like show during a run to just help identify patterns. Like if they could highlight, you know, if they keep running the same area or if it's just kind of a random stay the fuck away from people thing. That's like one of those good, like speaking of good party games like Nidhogg, I think Devil Daggers is a fun one to pull out. Like when you've got a bunch of gamers around and everybody's like, yeah, you know, I play video games. I know what the fuck I'm doing. And then you make them play some Devil Daggers. That's a real fucking equalizer, man.
Yeah. It is rough.
Yep. That's a hard game. It is hard. I threw this in here, but I don't know why. Dean Hall, the creator of the DayZ mod, is making a new multiplayer game. There's not a lot of details about it. I didn't know if maybe you had heard something more about this, Justin.
I heard stuff about this a while back, but I mean, there's just not a lot of info on it really yet.
It's like some big multiplayer space thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's not going to be like a Star Citizen. It's going to be more of a different sort of game style, I think.
The only thing that really caught my eye was that they were getting some funding from Chinese developer Tencent. And I forget, what is their game? Hold on. They've got some mobile fucking behemoth.
Are they the... Clash Royale, Clash of Clans.
Yes, okay. Clash Royale. That's it. Yeah. So they've got money.
But hey, Dean Hall. How about you finish the game you started?
He doesn't work.
He doesn't work on it anymore.
Does he not? I missed that entirely.
No,
he hasn't been involved in DayZ development for a couple of years.
Oh no, kidding. All right. Well, take back everything
He did the mod and sold like he went and worked at Bohemia for a little while, and then he like never really kind of connected himself to the standalone project very well, and then just kind of walked away, and that like there was kind of some minor, you know, hubbub after he left where people were like, oh man, you gotta abandon it, and he says, I was never really a part of it, and he just kind of like left, and everybody went, oh, all right, like this is Bohemia's game, so it's up to them to make it into a game. So I don't know. That's weird. He did that. What was the VR one that he did?
Out of Ammo.
Out of Ammo.
That's very fun.
It seems like it's been received really well. I mean, the guy seems like he, you know, has some knowledge about how to make games. So I'm kind of curious to see what he can do with money.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it's something worth following. Seems like a nice enough dude when I've seen him interviewed. You know, that goes a ways. So. J.J. Abrams is involved in a Portal movie. That sounds cool. Apparently he's working on a Half-Life movie as well. Is that... that ever happens? I don't know. I have no hope.
Yeah. That either one of these things will ever come to fruition.
I think you could do a lot with a Portal movie. I don't know. It sounds like kind of a
You cool could definitely movie. Toss more of a story in. There's more characters, and there's a little bit more of a backstory.
If there's one thing that J.J. Abrams is somewhat good at, it's taking an existing property and making it a financial success. So I'd be interested to see that, you know. I actually like the Star Trek reboot. I think the Star Wars that he just did was good. Lost was great until the last season. Like the guy makes sci-fi, and I'm always starved for that, so I'm interested to see what he does with it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they tell that story, you know? I mean, because so much of Portal and Portal 2 both are all about the contextual storytelling of those games.
Yeah, and the puzzles, man. I mean, how do you make a movie about puzzles?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the heart of it, right?
So,
some movie called Cube, guys.
Yeah,
you may have seen it.
Cube's a great movie.
Love that movie. Fucking great movie. When that guy gets sliced into all the chunks, man, that's so good right at the beginning.
Yeah.
I guess I'm interested from the standpoint of just like seeing how you do that. Like, okay, how do you make Portal into a movie? Let's see. Like, J.J. Abrams seems to know how to make movies pretty well. Let's see what you got. So, what I'm more interested in, I think, is Firewatch is being made into a feature film. I think that sounds like a cool idea.
Could also be a pretty boring movie.
Could. That could.
It just really depends on how closely they follow the game. And
like, I don't think they can just make like use the same storyline.
No. I would like it to end differently, I believe, just for the sake of it being a movie.
Yeah, but like, I mean, a whole bunch of people already played the game, and like the story is out there, so like you can't just like make that story again. So yeah. I mean, I'm assuming it's just going to be a in the universe of Firewatch.
Yeah.
I totally disagree. I think it's going to be that story.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I would go see that because I fucking love the story in Firewatch. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Right.
And if they do that, I hope they cast Rich Sommer as fucking main character because that guy's awesome.
Yeah, he's really good in it. I think that they do this story because I think in their minds, like when you're doing movie level accounting, the number of people who played Firewatch compared to the number of people you want to come to see this movie is a small slice. So they're not worried about you've seen this before kind of stuff. You know, I think it's going to get probably, if it ever got made, and I have a lot of questions about that, but if it did, I think it would play as sort of a romantic comedy drama kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, a little more grown up, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I could see it doing pretty well. I mean, I just like the story so much in that game. I hope that it's a thing that happens and is successful. So I'm a fan of the Campo Santo guys. I like their podcast. I like their game. So.
Yep.
Did we talk about, on the last episode, did we talk about the additions that they're putting in Firewatch?
I believe we did. If we didn't, I think just mentioning it quickly to say, like, oh, they've got this director's commentary stuff in there now.
Yeah, but they did, like, the audio tour, where, like, they added some content to the game where, like, as you're at the very beginning of the game, as you're going to get in your truck to, like, you've driven to Wyoming and you parked it and you're going to go to your Firewatch tower, trailer for it, they showed your character like picking up a Walkman and putting on a headset and starting like an audio tour like you would do at a museum or something. I think that's really a cool way to handle that.
Yep, that is cool.
And then they're adding a free roam mode where you can just like kind of walk around and enjoy the sights of that game, which was totally beautiful. So that's actually what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I would love to just walk around in that game for a while. That would be really cool. We at the last story here? We are.
Uh-oh. All right.
I thought this was super cool. I think I mentioned this to you, Justin, previously when we were playing RimWorld. I think I maybe talked about it. So you guys are familiar with, like, the Twitch Plays format where
Twitch will set up through kind of like some programmatic wizardry. They will make it so that the chat on a Twitch stream actually controls the video game that is being broadcast. They've done it with like Pokemon. I think they did it with Zelda, Legend of Zelda, where the chat would type in, like if you typed left, the character would move left. If you typed in jump, it would move jump. They've kind of expanded on that idea, and they came up with, I love this, they had a grandmaster chess player playing a digital game of chess against Twitch chat, and they set it up so that when it was chat's turn to move, everybody would type in what move they thought should be made. The program in the background would then tally up all of those choices and then would make the move that was the most popular choice. Excuse me. So the best part of this was, I gotta find it here. So they're playing the first game. The way this worked, I can't find it. First game was tense, said Williams. This is the British Grandmaster Simon Williams. First game was tense, but he won in the end. For the second game, the Grandmaster blindfolded himself and still managed to keep the position straight in his head, winning against 500 people. But by the end of the third game, facing 600 people, he was struggling. Where is it? He said on the stream, "I'm going to go cry in a corner now. Where did you get these people?" He asked of the stream's organizer. "These guys are like top chess players." When Twitch delivered its winning move, so they, like, all these people put in the move that they wanted and immediately started, like, typing in GG for good game because they knew they had won. But one of the games that they lost, so the people who are in chat don't know which move is going to get picked. They can kind of generally see what all the moves were that were popping up that people were putting in to get, you know, tallied up. But the moment in one of the games that they saw a move that the chat had picked, a whole bunch of players started typing into chat, offer draw, because they knew the wrong play had been made. Like, all these idiots had chosen the wrong thing. But what came out of this was, so you've got this grandmaster who's just like he's basically a chess computer. You know, it's just all in his head. He's super good at the game. But what was interesting was all the people on chat, and maybe not all of them, but a large portion of them were most likely using a chess program, essentially keeping track of the board and using this program to determine what their next game should be. And essentially the chess master was just playing like a supercomputer in chess via chat, because all these people were just like using a computer to do it, and he still managed to beat him twice, which is, I think that's really cool. Chess is a fucking hard game.
Mm-hmm.
And delivering it in this format I thought was really cool, but I liked that the people, their investment in it was pretty cool, where it's like, oh fuck, the chat just picked the wrong fucking move here, and everybody's like, no, see if he'll take a draw, fucking anything to pull this out. It was a cool story. I like that kind of shit.
Yeah. The eventual robotization of us all.
Robots. They're taking over.
Oh.
Even in Twitch chat.
Oh, robots.
That's it. That was supposed to be the feel-good story at the end of all this garbage.
But instead it turned into our eventual demise as a species. Once again.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Once yep, more.
Nice.
Sorry.
That's the news.
All right. Well, we actually have a couple of comments and questions here. Power listener Joseph Petruzziello dropped in. So he axes us. Any comment on the Sombra countdown / reveal / etc. for Overwatch? Also in the middle of a hurricane, I'll have a recipe next time. So for God's sakes, be careful. The last new that sniper healer character that they released, I thought was real cool.
Yeah.
I haven't been as up on the Sombra stuff. Apologies. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, once it drops, I'll know it and I'll be able to play that character for, you know, 3-4 matches and see how it plays. I'm not big on tank characters in that game as a rule. I like the supporting characters a little bit more. We'll see. That game is still fun to pick up for 5 or 10 minutes at a time.
I hope they put that on sale on PlayStation soon, because I'll probably pick it up. Like, I wish I had more time for Overwatch, because when they did their free weekend for it, I really had a good time in the matches that I played. I don't know. I'm not going to drop $60 on another shooter when there's so much other crap coming out that I'm interested in. I hope it goes on sale, because that would be a nice one to just have. Like, I played some Rocket League the other day, which I hadn't done in a while, because it was there, and it was like, yeah, I got a few minutes here, let's do that. And I think if I had Overwatch, I would certainly jump in there, play a few rounds. So when that hits a sale, I think I'll be more useful to answer those kinds of questions at that point.
Yeah, it is a real solid game. I mean, that as we approach the end of the year, you're going to see that pop up on top 10 lists for sure. He also asks us, just heard mods for Fallout/Skyrim are coming to PS4, so yay. And then as a follow-up, you know, basically asking, you think PlayStation delivers on this? And I think so. I think if they've reached a deal with Bethesda, because Bethesda's deal was, hey, this ought to be the Wild West. Whatever mods are on the PC should, you know, be available on consoles. And PlayStation is maybe not crazy about the idea of downloading user-generated executables onto their platform.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware that we were back to that this was going to happen. Like, last I heard, it was Bethesda saying it ain't going to happen. So
very recently,
they're still going back and forth. Yeah. All right. I mean, that's good, I guess. I mean, like, yes, mods for that on PS4. Should be something that happens, because that would be great. So I hope they hammer that out.
Agreed. And this is totally leaving Justin out of everything because of the PlayStation 4/Overwatch. I know. We've got to get more questions about, you know, Insurgency. Or is it Insurgency or Insurgents? Okay.
Insurgency.
Finally, he comments, more importantly, seeing the Friday the 13th, or more of the Friday the 13th game, the more hopeful he says he is about it. We've talked about that game a couple of times on this show, and I think it could be really cool if they get the tone right, which should be a little gruesome and very silly, I think.
Yes.
What's the one on Steam that was kind of the horror movie?
Dead by Dawn, Dead Before Dawn, Dead by Daylight.
Dead by Daylight. Yeah. I'm not familiar with as familiar with the Friday the 13th game. Is it along those lines where it's like you're playing as Jason, or?
Yeah, it's one player is Jason, and then everyone else is a victim.
Okay, yeah, so it's got that same model to it. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that game's still really popular on Steam. There's 8,000 people playing it right now. 17,000 peak today. So, I mean, that format is cool.
Oh, man, still. Poor No Man's Sky. Get their clock cleaned.
It's not even on the top 100 list. Like, Star Trek Online has 1,000 players, 1,500 players playing it right now.
Ugh. All right. It's so sad. I feel so bad for that game at this point. Like, I want them to come back strong. I'm always for kind of asymmetrical game experiences. I thought, a lot of that Left 4 Dead stuff was real, real fun. And I could, so I've pitched this before, and I'll do it again very briefly. I think to get that game right, whoever is the last remaining, like, human, non-Jason player, they got to get a bonus. It's got to have the final girl quality of, like, oh, you're kind of supposed to survive. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you make that happen in the game, but I feel like you got to kind of capture that for this game to really feel like a Friday the 13th game.
That's a hard balance because it's like if you want to do something like that, it still has to be fun for whoever's playing, you know, the villain.
So. Yeah, I think if you put here's I again, I don't know how to do this. I don't know nothing about making games. But if you could make it so that as Jason, you have the advantage, particularly before anyone is killed, you know, kind of a stealth sort of thing. And as the bodies pile up, the more your bonus decreases and theirs increases. And I think it might make for kind of a fun push and pull in that game. But
yeah. I mean, if he's kind of overpowered at the beginning so he can get a few kills, but then it starts to even out.
Yeah. So that by the end of it, you're kind of on a level playing field. You know, you're pushing the game to that confrontation.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my two cents on how to make that game kind of fun for me. But I don't know. I mean, it might turn out to just be like, here's Jason, here are the victims, play until one or all of you are dead. Which would be kind of disappointing, I think.
Yeah, I watched a lot of streams for Dead by Daylight, and like the concept seems cool, but it looked like there was like one. It has that problem where once people figure out how to play both sides of it really well, it kind of becomes formulaic after that. Like, there's no. It's like, well, they went to this part of the map. That means I got to do this thing to best combat that. Like, that can get pretty boring pretty fast. So that's hard.
Right.
Trying to figure out. Like, asymmetrical gameplay is tough. It's hard to balance that shit. So.
All right.
We shall see.
That is, it is it for our comments and questions and no recipes this week, unfortunately. But please. Drop those in. You can hop over to our Facebook page, which you can find off of the main website, stfgaming.com. There you can find links to iTunes and the Facebook page and the Twitter and a couple of donation buttons for us personally. Just money that we can use as a slush fund is what John called it. And
so we can buy slushies.
Right. The slushy fund. Oh, that's such a dumb joke.
That's why I'm here, man. I mean, I view this podcast as like some respite for my wife so that she can stop rolling her eyes at me and you guys can for like an hour or two. Because she puts up with a lot more of this shit than you guys have to.
Oh, man, God bless her and her Indian heritage. She has a
lot of patience, let me tell you.
It's good. It's important, is what it is.
It is.
But you can find more of John's marriage confessionals over at sdfgaming.com, along with links to all the social media, as well as the podcast itself, and links to all the videos and the YouTube page, where you can see us goofing around with RimWorld most recently, and hopefully in the not-too-distant future. I still want to show off a little of the Horizon 3, and yeah. I have a feeling Mafia 3 might be in my life. Speaking of, let's wrap her up with what we're going to be playing. And since I kind of tipped us off there, I'll just say, yeah, Mafia 3 is something that if the reviews are even kind of mediocre to positive, I kind of want to get in on. I love the idea of the character and setting of that game sound so unique to an open world experience that I'm real optimistic, and that game may not be very good. So, but I'm so tempted. So I may be checking that out. A little more Horizon 3, a little more Corpse Party, and that's probably it until next time. What about you there, Justin?
Definitely going to be checking out Star Citizen when that comes out on Sunday. That will probably eat into most of what I play for the next couple weeks.
I believe I will probably be joining you for at least some of that. Johnny Dolan, bring us home. What are you going to be playing?
I might dip back into the new Hitman episode a little bit and find some new ways to kill people that are entertaining to me. I'm definitely going to get into some more RimWorld and find some more ways to kill people. Be entertaining to me. Other than that, like I kind of was out of it for the last week. I had a real busy week with just a bunch of shit going on, so I need to go and poke around in Steam and see what's new out there and see what's coming up. But I mean, I'm still really digging RimWorld a lot.
All right. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us. And please, if you are listening to us on iTunes, drop over to our show page on the iTunes and leave us a review. It is one of the best ways to elevate the visibility of the show. The very best way, however, is just telling folks if you're enjoying it that you are, in fact, doing so. And to give us a listen as well. So I guess that is going to do it for episode number 40 in 10 episodes. That's right. Steak knives. So in the meantime, steak.
Is that like some kind of street slang for something? Or are we going to give away steak
no,
knives?
No, we're. It's actually just going to be the Glengarry Glen Ross speech. that's the whole episode.
Like, I thought you were, like, throwing up some kind of gang symbol and going, steak knives.
That's my... That is the gang I'm in. We call ourselves the Ponderosas. We just wander town
to
town
competitor?
Eating up all their beef.
Who's your rival gang? Gristle?
Vegans Gristles. In general, I would assume.
Yeah.
The vegans. Those guys are the worst.
On their electric scooters. In the Ponderosas, we ride Harleys or, you know, knockoffs of.
Okay. I believe you for this.
You don't have to believe, man. It's a lifestyle. Just got to accept it.
It's not a choice. It's a birthright.
Born a Ponderosa, die a Ponderosa. That is, that's them's
steak knives, motherfucker.
Throwing up the knives. That is my prison profile shot is me throwing up the steak knives.
Throwing up the knives. I think we've just invented a thing.
Medium rare for life. All right. All right, say goodnight, gentlemen.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good steak knives, bitches.
I keep doing devil horns every time I do that. I'm throwing.
Oh, really? I do more of the crossing the middle and forefinger.
Oh, that's not it. Yeah,
Wolverine style.
Yeah.
Steak knives. I don't know. We'll have to work on that. The official Shotcast handshake.
Yeah, that's what the show's really been missing, is a secret handshake.